From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. We've got a split show for you tonight. Later on, Alex Jones joins us, his perspective on world events. And in a moment, Jesse Ventura joins us for a special two-hour portion of Coast to Coast AM. His latest work, 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. Stand by for that. Here's what's happening. Well, the U.S. government says it has prevented more than 350 people suspected of ties to Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups from boarding U.S.-bound commercial flights since the end of 2009. The tighter security rules imposed after the attempted bombing of an airliner on Christmas 2009 reveal a security threat, they say, that persisted for more than 7 years after the 9/11 attacks. The U.S. Navy has fired a laser gun from one of its ships for the very first time. Researchers used the high-energy laser to disable a boat by setting fire to its engines off the coast of California. Similar systems had previously been tested on land. However, moist sea air presented an extra challenge as it reduces a beam's power. The Navy said the shipborne lasers could eventually be used to protect vessels from small attack boats. A strong new earthquake rattled Japan's northeast Monday as the government urged more people living near a tsunami-crippled nuclear plant to simply leave, citing concerns about long-term health risks from radiation. The magnitude 7.0 aftershock, which trapped some people in collapsed homes, came just hours after residents bowed their heads and wept in ceremonies to mark a month since a massive earthquake and tsunami killed up to 25,000 people there. While the price of gas above $3.50 a gallon in almost all states but one, there are signs that Americans are cutting back on driving now, reversing a steady increase in demand for fuel as the economy improves, they say. Gas sales have fallen for 5 straight weeks, the first time that has happened since November. Before the decline, demand was increasing for 2 months. Some analysts had expected the trend to continue because the economic recovery, they say, is picking up, adding 216,000 jobs since March. Up next, former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura joins us. We will be talking about 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit about our special guest tonight, Jesse Ventura, former independent governor of Minnesota. He's also a former member of the Navy Underwater Demolition 12 team. Professional wrestler, you all know that, movie actor, talk show host as well, and a visiting fellow at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Currently the host and executive producer of True TV's Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. And he's got this reputation as the ultimate nonpartisan truth seeker. He has no qualms, as you'll hear, about questioning authority, and he's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast Worldwide. Jesse, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hi, George. Good to be here. I'm a little tired, you know, when you get on the book tours. It's like about a dozen days right now of getting up about 5:30 in the morning and finishing about 11 at night or later.
Oh, it's a lot. I know when you're on the West Coast, I'm going to mention where you're going to be tomorrow and the next day. I just left Los Angeles, Jesse. I do my shows now between L.A. and St. Louis, and I go back and forth, back and forth. And it does get to you after a while.
Oh, yeah. You know, it, especially in a book tour like this, you know, it's a whirlwind. You do about 14 to 16 days, and you do so many interviews, you can't even remember them all. And you do these blocks of radio at times where you do 3 hours straight with, 30 stations or whatever it might be. But, you just got to focus. And like I do, I call it put it on automatic and just fly through it. And, of course, I'd rather be busy than laying around doing nothing, because then time marches much slower that way.
Well, at least shows like this, Jesse, you're on 542 stations tonight. So
I didn't realize you're that big.
Oh, it's the largest overnight show in the country. It took the spot where Larry King had this late night slot, then okay. Art Bell, and then here I am. And I echo you a little bit. I mean, I was never an elected official, but I lived in Minneapolis. I was in the Navy. And I've got to tell you, Jesse, not a day goes by where I don't get an email from one of our listeners talking about your television show and what you do, because it is right down everyone's alley. You're a truth seeker. You're looking for it. Our friend Alex Jones is going to follow you a little bit later on tonight. Same thing. We're looking for the truth. Have you always been that way?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I've always been a person, I don't like to be deceived. You know, I can handle the truth, you know, using the old Jack Nicholson thing from A Few Good Men, you can't handle the truth. Well, I believe I can. I would rather know the truth than to have it withheld from me you know, it's just that simple. I can deal with the truth and I'll adapt to it as long as I know what it is. So it's that simple.
You dedicated your book, 63 Documents, to a fellow that we think the world of on this program. He's been a guest, and like you, I think he's probably one of the only honest elected officials out there now, Congressman Ron Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. I've known Congressman Paul since I met him at the 2008 Counter Convention in Minneapolis. You know, that was the year that the Republican National Convention was there. And, you know, naturally, Congressman Paul wasn't overly welcomed in the Republican National Convention, so he held the Counter Convention. They were over at the XL Center, which is the hockey center where the Minnesota Wild plays, and he held the Counter Convention in Minneapolis at the Target Center where the Timberwolves play. And what I found unique about the whole situation, which I had to go over to the Republican thing to do a couple TV things, so I had to go over there the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found amazing was the Republican convention looked like a prison. They put up massive barriers, massive fencing. You had to go through three layers of security things plus a metal detector just to get in.
Oh.
Now, countering that, where we were over at the Target Center when Congressman Paul asked me if I'd be a keynote speaker, which I heartily agreed to do as soon as I knew they would let me talk about anything I wanted to. I'm a former season ticket holder of the Timberwolves. We had no more security than the normal security that's at a Timberwolf basketball game.
That is amazing.
There was no security outside, and we were sold out to the brink. There was 15,000 people in there, whatever it was. But I thought, how strange this is that Ron Paul's counter convention, including people like me, required virtually no additional security. And yet when you went over to the Republican convention, like I said, it looked like they were the center of a prison with like four of those big fences you see around prisons.
That's right.
With three security things to get in, plus they even had helicopters flying over the top. You know, that type of security. And I thought, you know, who are really the culprits here? Who really are the bad guys? Why would you need to be protected to that level?
That's a good point.
And where Ron Paul and all of us, we didn't require that. I drove up to the back door. They sent a car for me. Pulled up to the back door, got out of the car, went inside, met Congressman Paul and all this. We had the normal rental security of the Minnesota Timberwolves basketball that's there all the time. The other side, they had to bring in multiple police units from Minneapolis, St. Paul, all the suburbs. And they literally closed down streets, too. It went out like five blocks into the area of where commerce takes place, and all these people that wanted to do business had to shut their businesses down.
There were also people who lived in the area, they couldn't get to their houses.
Yeah, exactly. All of this just to provide security for the Republican convention. And I thought, this speaks volumes to me. Who really is loved by the people that didn't need any protection? And why would these Republicans require that type of protection?
Let's break a major story tonight, Jesse. Tell us you're running with Ron Paul in 2012.
Well, you know, I said that on Good Morning America, I think it was, back. And I did that, you know, and I'll tell you this. But I had a caveat with it. It requires Congressman Paul to leave the Republican Party because I will not. I'm an equal opportunity disliker of both parties. I don't like the Democrats. I don't like the Republicans. My belief is they are not the solution. They are the problem. They, for lack of a better term, they've sold their soul to rock and roll. You can go to both of their conventions and see the same high-priced corporate lobbyists at both paying them all off. So it doesn't matter who wins. I like to refer to it as like going into the grocery store. and you go to the soft drink department, and the only choices you're offered are Coke and Pepsi, two colas, one slightly sweeter than the other. There's no root beer, there's no orange, there's no 7-Up, there's no Mountain Dew. All you get is Coke and Pepsi, and that's your choice. I thought Ralph Nader described them perfectly. It's the two-party dictatorship that we're under today in our country. And so getting back, though, I said that I would give serious consideration. I didn't say I would do it, but if Congressman Paul would leave the Republican Party, I would give serious consideration to being his running mate.
People just want honest government, Jesse, as you well know. I mean, your victory, as you became governor of Minnesota with the Reform Party at the time, was I thought it was a message to the world that people just wanted somebody in there that they could believe. They were fed up with the parties. They were fed up with the political system. And you won. Did it surprise you?
No, I don't do anything to lose. I didn't go into that race to lose.
No, I know that.
I went in to win, and I knew if the chips fell right, and I knew that if things worked out, and the big mistake made was this. The Democrats made a movement that I suppose they thought would be very honorable, but that isn't why they did it. They stated they would not debate unless I was included, because they felt, because I'm fiscally conservative and I'm for smaller government and less intrusive government, they thought that I would zap votes away from St. Paul Mayor, former Senator Norm Coleman, who was the opponent, and of course it was Hubert H. Skip Humphrey, the son of Vice President Hubert Humphrey, and our Attorney General at the time. They made that decision thinking that I would, you know, take enough votes away from Coleman to ensure a Humphrey victory. Well, at the time, Humphrey was polling, I think, about 44% to 46%. Coleman was polling about 32%, and I was at 10%.
Wow.
7 weeks before the election. But when they made the statement that they wouldn't debate unless I was included, I sat back in the corner like a Cheshire cat.
You knew,
and I
right
said, you have no idea the mistake you just made, because I go by the simple thing that I like to say, call it a cliche or whatever. If I can debate them, I can beat them. Because these two parties are so full of baggage, they're so corrupt, that a person like me who doesn't have the corruption can expose their corruption. And you know, you notice how the media, and no movies were made or anything about what we accomplished there.
You're
this
right.
This was bigger than people could believe. And I'm not saying it because I did it. Just the whole thing that happened, because here's the thing that all your listeners need to know, and I'll tell you a quick story.
Okay.
When I was growing up, and I was a teenager, my father, who was a World War II vet with an eighth grade education at the time, stated to me one day that all politicians are crooks. And I, of course, said, come on, Dad, you can't make a blanket statement like that. They can't all be crooks. And he said, oh, yes, they can. You want to know why? And I said, why? He said, because they spend $1 million for a job that only pays $100,000. Nobody in the private sector would do an investment like that. Only politicians. Well, here's the big end of the story that you don't hear much about. Do you know how much money I raised to become the governor of Minnesota?
I'm going to guess, because I've done a little homework, $300,000.
You got it. $300,000. Well, you do your homework, because most people are totally unaware. $300,000, which, and at that time, 98, the Dems and Repubs combined spent $12 million to win that election. Well, I could, my father, that's my one regret in life, is that my mother and father were both gone by the time I won governor. They never saw me become governor.
They would have been proud.
It was a first marriage for both, and they were career people. My dad was 40 and my mom was 30 when they got married, so I always had much older parents than most of my schoolmates did. But I could say to my dad today, if he were around, your son's not a crook, because I bet I'm the only elected official at a high-level election, or maybe any election, for statewide to federal in the last 50 years, who can say they made more money doing the job than what they raised and spent to get it.
You started giving tax money back to the citizens, didn't you?
Well, I'll explain. that. But anyway, I made $120,000 a year as governor, which, if my Roosevelt High School math is correct, that means I made $480,000 for the 4 years, which I only spent $300,000.
Yeah.
Who else could possibly say that? Now, where were we going? What did you say until I got that in?
Well, we were talking about primarily what was going on in your life at the time as the governor. But I wanted to ask you why you didn't seek reelection. You would have won.
I know. I had the highest approval rating in Minnesota history for a governor at one point. I was 73%. I'll tell you why. And I wrote about it in my previous book 2 books ago called Don't Start the Revolution Without Me, because I didn't want to discuss it with the Minnesota media because I went on war with them. When they attacked my children when I was in office, I swore I would never talk to them once I got out of office, ever again. And I've kind of mellowed. I've talked to a couple media since then, but I went a few years without. Here's the reason why I didn't seek reelection. It was my wife's health.
Okay.
And I didn't feel that was there. I didn't want the media to know about it because all they would do is exploit it.
Yes.
That was part of the problem. It affected my wife tremendously, and you can imagine as a mother when her children get attacked for no reason by the media. You know,
do you miss it at all?
Sure. I miss it. Absolutely. You accomplish things. It's exciting. You're the top man in the state. Nobody can tell you what to do.
Yeah.
You know, but no, my wife's health, and in my mind, Ed, she's doing much, much better now. And part of it is our move to Mexico, where we live a real simple life down there. I like to tell people, they say, what do you do in Mexico? And I said, well, I wake up every morning with nothing to do. And when I go to bed that night, I'm half done. And so she's doing much better now. But I will tell you this, I will not put any elected job ahead of my wife. My wife is more important to me. We've been together 35 years now. It'll be 36 this summer. She is far more important to me than holding any political position. So that is the major reason I did not seek reelection or a second term. Also because I believe one of the big problems in our country is career politicians. Make a career out of it.
There's no question about it. But while you were in office, you saved enough money from the state coffers that you started giving taxpayers money back.
No. It wasn't that. It was the robust economy. We had such a robust economy then. Remember, this is before 9/11.
But you did give people refunds,
Absolutely.
Basically.
What happened was this. I'll explain. We would set a budget, and of course you got your normal taxes in place because the economy was so powerful. That's why I ran for governor. The state was getting surpluses. You know, they were and of course at a state level you have to run by law a balanced budget.
Right.
It's not like the feds who can get all this debt.
Yeah.
But revenues were coming in so big, that was why I ran. We had a surplus before I got in office, and they spent it. And I said, wait a minute. They had a budget. If there's excess money, it doesn't give the politicians the right to be kids in a candy store and just go on a shopping spree. You give that money back. And so we had 3 surpluses out of the 4 years I was in office, and we would give checks back to the people in the form of a sales tax rebate. And the reason I did it that way, the Republicans wanted it to be an income tax rebate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I would have done an income tax rebate, they would have to declare it, which means a third of their money would go to the feds. I thought, why do that? Let's make it a sales tax rebate. We'll credit it to the sales tax. You can't deduct the sales tax off your taxes. So therefore, when you get the money back as a sales tax rebate, it's free money. You don't have to declare it to the federal government. And people called them Jesse checks. And in fact, I met an elderly woman who told me that she took her check, and some of the checks were as much as $1,500, $1,800 to people. It depended on your income and how much we felt you would buy, things like that. It wasn't purely accurate. No, you could never be purely accurate, but it was close enough. And this old woman told me she needed a new lawnmower. And when the check came, it was enough money for her. She went down and bought her new lawnmower, and she named it Jesse.
I love it. Well, you know what I like about you, Jesse? If you and I went to lunch, Yeah. And I had a $20 bill on the table and went to wash my hands. When I came back, you'd put another 20 down there. It would be 40. Any other politician, the 20 would be gone.
Well, maybe I learned that overseas, because when we were overseas in the military, which, of course, in my day it was Vietnam, money really meant nothing. We were into Louis L'Amour cowboy books. And if you put a Louis L'Amour cowboy book and a $50 bill down on your rack, your bed, the 50 would still be there. The Louis L'Amour cowboy book would be gone, because that had value. The money didn't.
Jesse, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We'll be right back with Jesse Ventura, his book, 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. When I come back, I'll also tell you about a couple book signings he's going to have in the Los Angeles area. And next hour, we'll take phone calls with Jesse Ventura. We've got him for 2 hours. We'll be right back. Well, with New York Times bestselling author Jesse Ventura, wrote a book with Dick Russell called 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. What are some of them? We'll get into that in a moment. By the way, those of you in the greater Los Angeles area, on Tuesday and Wednesday, Jesse will be signing his book for you. Let me give you those locations. The ESP Zone at LA Live, great area, by the way. He'll be there Tuesday night, 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific time. Those of you that live out that way. Then on Wednesday, he'll be at the Borders Bookstore in Torrance, California. That's 3700 Torrance Boulevard. He'll be there from 7 to 9 p.m. Going out there, it's a real treat. Jesse Ventura, our special guest, and we'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We'll take calls next hour with Jesse, not this hour. Jess, all the lines are already busy. People, tell me about the evolution of the television show, which is the highest rated show on True TV.
How well, first, let me say, I now have a website.
Ah,
first
super.
Time in history. And,
you've come out of the dark ages. Tell me about it.
Well, because my son's running it. He's
all right.
The computer whiz. But anyway, for those that are interested out there on Coast to Coast, it's, of course, all one word, no apostrophe. It's weaintgottimetobleed.com.
Super, and we'll put a link up for you at coasttocoast.com.
Terrific, yep. Weaintgottimetobleed.com. And that's, it went up. We went up a week ago, then the official Jesse Ventura, this is the only one that's actually official. If there's others out there, they're not. But this is my official website.
Ask your son tomorrow how many hits he got on the website, and it will astound you.
Okay, I sure will. I'll see him tomorrow, so I will ask him if he's checked at that time, and then I'll see him again Wednesday, too. So between the 2 days, I'll try to find out.
I'll make you a little wager. You ready?
Yep.
I bet you will get slammed so much that he will say, Dad, it got slowed down to a stop for at least a few hours.
Okay.
That's the bet. You're on.
I'll find out what he says to me about it.
Super. Okay, now the TV show, Conspiracy
sure.
Theory.
Yeah.
You know, when I started doing this radio program, Jesse, full-time back in 2003, half of the subjects I was really into, the paranormal, the unusual, ghosts and things like that.
Yep.
The conspiracy stories, you know, I was 9 years in the Navy. I was an officer. You know, I believed the government line. You know, I was a little weary about these, other than the Kennedy assassination. But
right.
Then, you know, I started getting people calling me saying, hey, you got to listen to this Alex Jones guy, or you got to listen to this and that. And all of a sudden, I woke up. I simply woke up. Is that what happened with you, too?
Yeah, I think it is. I'm also a Navy veteran, not quite as long as you, but of 6 years. And, you know, I again, Kennedy, the same. I started studying Kennedy, ironically, when wrestling made its change in the mid-80s. We went from territories driving cars to when Vince McMahon took us national and all of a sudden we're flying in airplanes all around the country. Well, anyone is travels at all in airplanes knows they're boring. You spend hours in airports, hours on planes, and in wrestling you do it every day.
Yeah.
So I began reading and I began digesting everything I could on the Kennedy assassination. And, you know, I came to the conclusion there's, you know, we've been fed a pile of bull. Lee Harvey Oswald could not have acted alone to pull this off like they told us. It's a lie. Well, then, of course, as we got to 9/11 happening, I was in office, and I, like everyone, went into full combat mode when I was in office. I felt, hey, the state of Minnesota could be a threat with Mall of America and all of that. And so I was busy doing that. I didn't pay attention until I got out of office in 03. And what really caused me to start really questioning things was when George Bush stated we were now going to invade Iraq.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought, wait a minute, they told us that these guys, 19 guys that attacked us, there wasn't one Iraqi. Not one.
Not one.
Why would we invade Iraq? I thought, this is as strange as if Pearl Harbor happened and we invaded Korea and thought, well, after all, they're Asian too, aren't they? You know, and I thought, this makes no sense. This is crazy. Why are we going into Iraq? And, of course, then in 04, I was teaching out at Harvard when Robert McNamara came through and basically said that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a fraud. You know, he fessed up that stated it didn't happen. And I thought, my God, that's what put us into the Vietnam War, where I'm a veteran of. 58,000 of my generation killed, possibly a million or more Vietnamese killed. And the catalyst was what we would call, of course, today a false flag operation. Are you kidding me? Well, that's when I really started to say, what is going on here, which was after 2004. And I started to truly then investigate 9/11. And, of course, my son came home, and the big catalyst there was he kept saying to me, Dad, you got to see this thing on the Internet called, what was it again, spare change or loose change?
Loose change.
He said, you got to watch this thing on the Internet, loose change. So my wife and I had come home from Mexico, and it was I remember May or June, that was a beautiful sunny Sunday, nothing to do, we had nothing to do, and I looked at my wife and said, well, this thing my son keeps telling me about loose change, let's watch it. I watched it, and I went through every emotion I could, from anger, laugh, crying, everything, almost feeling sick, when I started seeing what they had produced on this thing. And then I became focused on 9/11, and I said, I want to learn as much as I can about what they said happened here. And today, I don't believe the government story of 9/11. I think that if certainly, here's the three options as I look at it. Either we knew about it and allowed it to happen.
Right.
Or we knew about it and participated in it.
Mm-hmm.
Or these were the dumbest buffoons that could have ever been in charge of our country, who could have all this pre-information. I mean, I always remember Condoleezza Rice with that August 6th memo that states as clear as the nose on your face, Bin Laden will hijack planes and run them into buildings, and she testifies, we had no idea. Well, and then, of course, they didn't listen to Mr. Clark of the NSA, who had been warning and warning, and I started to think they knew it was going to happen. They either are part of it or they allowed it to. There's no doubt in my mind.
And, Jesse, add a fourth point to this.
Okay.
Let me tell you this. I believe that on this planet, there is a bigger group of people who are controlling everything. They are the puppet masters of presidents, of prime ministers. They've got more money than God. They control destinies of countries.
You may be right, George, because of the fact that what's proving that to me right now is Barack Obama.
Yes,
because,
exactly.
You know, President Obama ran on a platform of change we can believe in. And it was like all these things he said he was going to do, get us out of the war, close Gitmo, he hasn't done. And now we're in a third war.
No,
and I can only assume, you know what? What did they do? Bring him in and show him the Zapruder film? And say, this could happen to you? I don't know, but clearly it's showing me you probably are absolutely right.
And
that the president's nothing but a figurehead and somebody else calls the shots.
Right. And what I think these people did is they went to a Bin Laden and said, okay, you've got these little wackos running around all believing with you. You've been on our payroll for years anyway. We need something like this done. And boom, off it goes.
Well, either that or I believe Bin Laden's been dead for a long time.
Which is possible.
I mean, the guy's on a dialysis machine. How the hell can you be humping around the hills of Afghanistan and get your dialysis treatment?
Donald Rumsfeld was on a radio show, a friend of mine, Mancow, a few weeks
ago. Oh, I know Mancow.
Okay, Eric, a good guy.
Sure.
And he asked Rumsfeld about building number 7. Which I want to talk with you about in a second.
Sure.
And Rumsfeld said, what's that? how could the guy who was the head of our Defense Department not know about Building 7 or at least play dumb about it?
Well, did Mankow explain it to him then?
Yeah,
what was
yeah.
his reaction?
Oh, he did. He just had this blank face on him. And, I mean, that building alone, nothing hit that building.
Yep.
And it came crumbling down just like the other ones.
Well, okay, here's the tie into the book that Dick and I just did.
Mm-hmm.
We produced the documents from NIST, the official investigation, which took about 6-7 years before they made it public. And in the documents, they state the building came down freefall. Well, that's the same as saying it's demoed, because freefall means that it's falling with no resistance, that it's falling like I used to jump out of airplanes, freefalling. And that can only happen when all the resistance is removed, because anything else defies Newton's laws of gravity, and you can't defy physics. Physics is what it is. And so here are the government documents in my book from the government. You know, it's their documents. It's not mine. Let me see it. I believe it's document. Let me go to my book here.
Sure.
I don't have them all memorized.
I know what it's like when you write these books and then one of these radio hosts asks you.
A new book, so yeah. This is like review. But when you go to document 47, the free fall of Building 7. You know, it's document 47, which it's their own documents and their own words that say the building went into freefall. That can only happen if all resistance is removed, and there's only one way to do it, with demolition.
And most of the members of the 9/11 Commission, Jesse, did not feel they did an adequate job.
Well, yeah, and I'm certain they didn't, because they didn't do an adequate job. They didn't investigate anything. And if you want to, George, if you want to know volumes, always follow the money. You know that.
Exactly.
Here's a little point. You remember Whitewater?
Yep.
Okay, Whitewater. They spent $100 million to learn ultimately the president cheated on his wife, right?
Yeah.
Do you know how much after George Bush stonewalled any investigation for what? Nearly a year and a half, 2 years, till the families put so much pressure on. Do you know what originally they allocated to investigate the death of 3,000 people?
How much?
$4 million.
Oh, my God.
They spent $100 million on Whitewater. They allocated initially $4 million. I think it ended up costing $11 or $12 in the end. But, I mean, that should speak volumes to your listeners out there stating they didn't want a real investigation, because, there was no interest in spending money. And here's another quick one. Have you ever read the book called Kill Bin Laden?
No, I've seen some excerpts from it.
Well, it's written by Colonel Dalton Fury, who was the head of the Delta Force when they had him pinned down at Tora Bora.
Okay.
And in the book, he says there was only one escape route through this valley between the mountains into Pakistan. He tells in the book that he wanted to insert the Delta Force on the other side of the mountain and wait in ambush, so that when Bin Laden attempted to escape Tora Bora, the Delta Force would be waiting there for him, right?
And we could have done that. Yep, great.
Well, what happened, he had to go to the Pentagon, or up to the White House, and he said right in the Oval Office, Bush and Cheney denied him the ability to do that. They wouldn't let him do it.
Why not?
Well, clearly they didn't want him caught. Clearly, that was the escape. That's all I can make out. And here's what really gets me now, is that all you heard from Bush was that he lets his field commanders call the shots and do the war. Well, in this case, he certainly didn't. And I challenge with this. You got George Bush, who couldn't even make it to National Guard meetings. You got Dick Cheney, who had like 5 deferments from the military during Vietnam, and those two bozos are overruling the expertise of an elite Delta Force commander.
Amazing.
Well, clearly to me, George, doesn't it look that way? They didn't. They gave him a way out, and Bin Laden took it.
Yep. Yeah. Look, we know Jesse.
This isn't me again. The book is called "Kill Bin Laden," and the author is Colonel Dalton Fury.
He was on the CIA payroll for years.
Yep, and I urge everybody to read the book for yourself and make your own judgment on that.
As you look at this planet today, the economy, this push for a one-world government, the collapse in the Middle East? What do you think's going on?
I don't know, but you know, when people talk about the one world government, not that I'm for it, but you know, it may be inevitable.
I think it's inevitable. I agree with you.
Because
we might not
the world is getting so much smaller, George, with technology and computers, that it maybe not in our lifetime, but maybe 100 years from now, there will indeed be one government in charge of the whole planet.
Yeah, I envision a one military rule in all of these countries, including the United States. We're going to be like little satellites of the whole.
And, you know, okay, there's a good side to that. Maybe. If you have a world government, then that means there shouldn't be any wars anymore, right?
There shouldn't be.
There shouldn't be. But the key is, how can you ensure that this one world government aren't going to be tyrants?
That's right. That's the downside.
That's the million-dollar question there. I mean, you know, I could possibly live with it if the one world, because I've always stated publicly, the greatest government in the world would be benevolent dictator. But the key is you got to be benevolent.
You're not going to find one.
Well, because as a benevolent dictator, you could get everything done. If you needed to build the bridge, you order it. The bridge is built. But again, the power corrupts. So the point is you could never find anyone. And plus, you'd also, George, have to put term limits on benevolent dictator.
Now, and when you said you're in Mexico now, does that mean you're not happy with the United States?
I'm not happy with the United States, absolutely, but Mexico is not the reason. I am not happy with the United States. I'll go on record right now and state that. In fact, I have T-shirts on my website that state, and people can get them, I love my country, not my government. Because there's a difference.
There's a huge difference,
and not a lot of people understand that.
We have
those T-shirts because that's a quote I said. I said, I love my country, but not my government, because I don't like Democrats and Republicans. It's that simple. They are the problem, not the solution. When they're out there talking about who to blame, it's them. They've been in charge for my whole life. They're to blame. That's the situation, I guess.
I was 13 when John Kennedy was killed. I think you were 12.
Yeah, we're about the same age. I was born 51.
Yeah, and I was in 50. You got a birthday coming up in July, don't you?
Right.
Okay, and from that moment on, I think we lost this country.
Well, that was a coup d'etat.
Yep.
No doubt about it. It was a coup d'etat where our president was removed, not by ballot, not by vote, but by a bullet. And I'm just unbelievable that on my show this past year, Conspiracy Theory, we did it. They promised me the second year I could do JFK, and we did. And I thought we brought a lot of good points to light. But the big thing, the big climax for me was the confession of E. Howard Hunt.
Yes.
We had it on tape, audio, visual, and written. He confessed to his son, St. John Hunt. And what got me, there wasn't one word even said in the mainstream media about it.
Not at all. We had St. John on the program. When this was all happening, but you're absolutely right. I do believe him.
I do, too. I believe him. He's a level-headed guy. He seemed like a straight shooter to me.
I don't think on his deathbed E. Howard Hunt had anything to gain. I think he was talking from the heart.
No, but here's what I got out of it. He wasn't confessing out of remorse.
No, not at all.
He was confessing out of being proud.
He felt he was doing something for his country.
Yeah, they thought that this, because I guess they thought Jack Kennedy was some commie pinko or something that got elected, and he was too soft with the communists. And it was a confession of pride, and that's what really was chilling about it to me.
What do you think of WikiLeaks?
I think they're heroes.
If they're allowed to do what they're going to do.
What's that?
They're going to squeeze them and shut them down, won't they?
Oh, sure they are. Then who I'm really worried about is this young Private Bradley Manning.
Yeah.
Who allegedly leaked it all.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Quantico right now, and they're torturing him. From what I've heard, he's naked. They got him in solitary confinement. He's facing 52 years, and who's to say they're not waterboarding him? Because let's remember now, we're a country who tortures. We no longer have the high ground anymore, and I have been waterboarded, George, so I speak from experience. It's torture. It used to be called Chinese water torture.
You feel like you're drowning, don't you?
Well, worse than that is what you get initially. Have you ever gone in the water and got water in your sinuses?
Yes, I've done that.
Well, this thing, waterboarding literally fills your sinuses. They're the first things that fill up. And then you got the burning pain. Then you feel, as it continues, like you're also drowning.
That is scary. Jesse,
oh, it's horrid.
We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back with a final hour with you. Phone calls with Jesse Ventura. We're talking about his work, 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read. He doesn't hold back. You're next on Coast to Coast AM. And our guest this hour, Jesse Ventura. We're talking about his work, 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read. After this, we're going to let him go, let him get some sleep. So he's got a major book signing at the ESP Zone at LA Live. That'll be Tuesday night, 7:30 to 9, 800 West Olympic Boulevard. Those of you listening on KFI AM 640 in LA, go on by and say hi to Jesse Ventura and look at some of his work. We'll be back with him and your phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jesse, you're at the ESPN Zone tomorrow night, signing Tuesday night, which is, you know, it's becoming Tuesday already in most time zones. Do you like book signings?
Yeah, I don't mind them. The only thing is when you do them and they've been as massive, and I got to tell you, my one's in New York, and the first one was tonight here in Santa Monica in California. Man, I sign so many books, I see my signature when I fall asleep.
Oh,
by the way, George, I wanted to tell you, you know, you were playing Barry McGuire's Eve of Destruction.
I love that song.
Oh,
yeah.
I covered that when I had my rock and roll band in the mid-80s, The Soldiers of Fortune. And I actually recorded it with Mike Plenn of Virgin Records. He had me do it. And it got on a Hitmakers CD, which is like a promotional thing. I think I was sandwiched between Paul McCartney and Motley Crue.
That's fantastic. And you were once, were you not, the bodyguard for the Rolling Stones?
Well, I bodyguarded all the rock bands. In 78 and 81, I was recovering from some minor knee surgery, and a friend of mine wanted to know, you know, you made about $25, but you got to hear the show. And so I did. I actually did the Stones twice. I did Bruce Springsteen, Foreigner, the Grateful Dead. I did them all at that era time. But, yeah, it was kind of fun to do the Rolling Stones because the first proclamation I did as governor, the Stones were coming to Minnesota in 1999 on the No Security Tour. And I declared my first official proclamation in Minnesota as governor was to declare it Rolling Stones Day.
I love it. I gave a speech about a month ago in L.A., and I met Bob Dylan's son, Jesse Dylan.
Okay.
And he's trying to get Bob Dylan on the program. He says he doesn't do media at all, but he said, I think he might do it. Our mom, his wife, Jesse's mother, listens to our radio show, and he said we might be able to pull it. And Bob Dylan was just in Vietnam giving a concert.
Really? Well,
how
I run. You know, Bob's an old Minnesotan.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, he's from Hibbing.
Yes, I loved it. You know, I worked at KSDP Television.
Okay.
You were at the radio station before I got there.
Yeah, they fired me.
The Hubbards are good people. They're tough, but they're good people.
Yeah, but they fired me. They just signed me to a 2-year contract and then fired me a month and a half later. I could never figure that one out.
Well, you've had a varied career. There's no doubt. Did you enjoy wrestling?
Sure. For the time that I did it, I've enjoyed all my careers.
Did you ever get hurt?
Sure. Absolutely, you get hurt. One time I wrestled 63 consecutive nights in a row.
That's grueling.
Without a day off. You know Brock Lesnar, the fighter?
Yes.
You know, the mixed martial art former champ?
Those guys are tough.
Well, get this. Brock was also in the WWE. Brock told me, he said, pro wrestling's way harder than Ultimate Fighting. And here's why.
Yeah.
He said, I go through 15 minutes of hell in Ultimate Fighting, then I got 4 months off and then 2 months to train to do it again. So I only have to do it twice a year. Wrestling, you go every night, interviews, traveling, the grind, it's unbelievable. Like I said, I there's guys that would beat me by far, but I wrestled at 1.63 nights in a row.
Gosh, that's intense. Let's
and of course, because there's no union in wrestling, so Vince can just abuse everybody.
We're going all around the country now with Jesse Ventura. Let's start it off by going to Paul in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Bob.
Mr. Ventura, you said earlier you would consider VP with Ron Paul.
Well, I might flip a coin. Maybe I want the top job. Maybe we'll have to flip
if he left the Republican Party. But he also ran, if memory serves, on the Libertarian ticket about, a couple decades ago.
Well,
and I wonder what you think now about the Libertarian Party.
Well, that would be our route to go, because the key is having ballot access in all 50 states.
That's right.
And I think I'm correct in stating that the Libertarians have ballot access in all 50 states. And so that being the case, the Libertarian Party would probably be the way for us to go if they would give Ron Paul and I their endorsement.
Why not just let him run?
Do that.
Jesse, why not let him run as a Republican, you run as a Republican, and change things if you get elected?
Well, I just couldn't have that name in front of me.
Okay.
I just could not put that name. I have been independent my entire life, and I would feel that I sold out regardless, because Republicans ain't going to let me in there. I'm pro-choice.
No, they won't.
You know, I don't care about gay marriage. I don't care if gays go in the military. See, my social position, I'm fiscally conservative and socially liberal.
Yeah, you're like a little bit of everything, aren't you?
Well, I think I'm what average Americans are.
Well, you probably
they want are. Less government, less intrusive, and I don't care what anyone does as long as they don't infringe it upon anyone else.
If you were to change one thing about government, one thing, you had a crystal ball and the little genie gave you one wish, what would it be?
I would wish to become the benevolent dictator. And the key is the word benevolent.
And could we trust you?
Well, I'd like to believe you could, but always remember power corrupts. But actually, on a serious note, you could truly get the jobs done then. You wouldn't have to clear it through Congress or nothing. If you needed a bridge built, build it. If you need this, do it. But the key to benevolent dictator is you got to have term limits on them.
Yeah.
So you'd need a new one then. And then, of course, you must be benevolent, which we all know power corrupts. You know, people get in with good intention, but when they're there long enough, it's going to corrupt them eventually. And I would like to hope I wouldn't be, but who knows?
And then they want to stay. They don't want to give it up.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was actually in the Philippines. I was physically there when the day Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law. And let me tell you this, for all the people out there that don't believe in our Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, I'll state this. That is there not to hunt and fish. It's there to protect us against oppressive governments so that we, the people, have a way to rise up and defend ourselves if we have to. That's what it's in there for.
So true. So true. You should run.
Let me state this. The first thing Marcos did when he became dictator, he gave the people 10 days to turn in all guns or it was the death penalty.
Yeah, how about that?
Now, why would a dictator do that? Because you got to disarm the public.
If they start trying to collect the guns in the United States, it's over.
They're already doing it. That's the Democrat role. See the two roles? You got the Republicans doing all the other stuff, but it's the Democrats that want gun control, blah, 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 like you watch Bill Maher. Oh, yeah, control the guns. You know, and most of the time I agree with Bill Maher, but I vehemently disagree with him. That's the Democrats' role in this whole deal. The liberal role is to get us to give up our weapons or give up our guns and our ways of defending ourselves. And for those that think, like, here's the argument. Well, we could never stand up to the U.S. government with our shotguns, rifles, and this and that. Well, I seem to recall a bunch of rice farmers over in Southeast Asia that did pretty damn good against our mighty military. We couldn't defeat them, and we dropped more ordnance on them than they did in World War II.
That's a good point. Washington, Indiana. Tom, go ahead. You're on with Jesse Ventura.
Yes. The records show that Lee Harvey Oswald had trouble even qualifying as a marksman in the Marine Corps, and that's the lowest qualification that a rifleman even to carry a gun can have.
You're absolutely correct.
And he could not possibly have done the shooting, and plus the rifle he was using was notoriously inaccurate, and they had to modify that rifle to be able to hit anything with it.
Well, if you watched my show this fall, we had the identical weapon with the same telescopic sight, and I can tell you, I qualified expert in both pistol and rifle, and when I was governor at age 50, I still qualified expert with a rifle, and I could not make those shots, and that telescopic sight was a joke.
Jesse, what's going on with the FEMA camp show? Did that air or not? I've heard
it aired one time.
Okay.
It aired one time, and then apparently that Congressman Cohn and the government got so bent out of shape, or it hit a nerve, they came to the parent company of True TV, Time AOL, or whatever they are, and they pulled it, and now they won't even acknowledge that we did it. It's blank on there. So Jesse Ventura is likewise being censored right now.
Amazing. What did you find in the first show? Do you believe that they're out there, these camps?
The bill says that they're to build them, and we went and looked at a place in Texas that was eerie. It was called a residence, and I approached the door of this place live, and it took a half hour before they'd answer the door, and when I finally got people out to ask them what it was, every answer I got was no comment. They would not comment, and here was the scary part of that. Double fences with the barbed wire facing in. Now, the key to that is always look at the barbed wire. If it's facing in, it's to keep you in. If it's straight up, it's neutral. If it's facing out, then it's to keep people from the outside getting in. Well, this was set up to keep people from the inside getting out. Two rows, 20 feet between. It looked just like a prison, and here's the scary part. In the back, it looked like a daycare center. They had slides and swings and all this stuff for children to play. And I asked them, are there children here? Have you kept children here? What on earth could a child do to get put in here? No comment, no comment, no comment.
When you've been on some of the mainstream shows, the TV shows primarily,
yep.
Do they get it? Do they understand what you're saying?
No.
I didn't think
so. No. These people are in denial. The majority of America is in denial. They will not accept the fact that the U.S. government could be evil, or that they're, now, don't get me wrong, there's great people in government. There's patriotic people in our government. There's good people in our government. But there is also an element of evil in our government. And for some reason, nobody wants to admit our United States ego that somehow the United States government could be evil.
North Hollywood we go. Carlos, you're on with Jesse Ventura on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Carlos.
What a pleasure, man. You have all the personalities I'd like to talk to, from Evel Knievel to Carl Sagan. I get to talk to you. How you doing, man?
Good,
you get them all.
How are you?
Good. Hey, did you ever hang out with Motley Crue when they lived up the street from the whiskey?
No, I've never hung out with them. I'm too busy doing my own thing hung out with them.
You know, 20 years ago or so.
Nope, not then either. I was wrestling then.
Oh, okay, cool. I wanted to ask you, you plan on doing anything with Classy Freddie Blassie in the future, whether music or anything else?
Freddie Blassie passed away.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Unless I pass away, I can't do nothing with him.
Well, your health's pretty darn good.
It's fairly good. You know, I turned 60 this summer, and like everyone, you get a few issues. I always like to refer to the great Katharine Hepburn and her quote. She said, Katharine Hepburn said, growing old is not for the faint of heart.
No, so true. Tupelo, Mississippi. Hey, Joseph, go ahead. You're on with us.
Oh, yes. Oh, I really enjoy your show there, George.
Thank you, Joseph.
Jesse, I just had a question for you there.
Sure.
I really enjoyed you as a wrestler and as an actor, and, you know, I mean, you just had a great career, and I'd really like to see you run for president. And my question is for you, you know, Nikola Tesla, years ago, he had invented an oscillating resonator. Do you think that HARP may have more to do with an earthquake machine than as a weather control?
I don't know, you know.
Off the air, you know.
I don't know. You know, I went up and saw HARP, or I tried to see it, and I did see it from a helicopter in the show where we looked at it. I didn't even know this thing existed. When we started doing the show, they said, Governor, you going to Alaska? I said, for what? They said, to see this thing HARP. I didn't even know about it. But I did meet Dr. Nick Baggage, who wrote the book, Angels Don't Play This Harp.
Good guy.
And
good.
All I can say is this. He looked me right in the eye and he said, Governor, this is the death ray, if there is one. And, you know, this thing, obviously they lie because they called it an unclassified research center. Well, if it's unclassified, then I certainly ought to be able to come in. But they wouldn't let me in. And so clearly it is classified, and they're lying about it. And there's a lot of mystery up there. We traveled around. We couldn't get any of the locals to talk to us until we finally found a guy and a woman that said, sure, we'll talk to you. And he told me he was there. He does the snow plowing there. He said, if you want to get in, I can take you in the back way on an ATV. And I said, well, it's too late now. It's too late in the day, and we're on the schedule. But I'm not sure, you know what, you know, I'm not a scientist, and I don't know to what level this thing can accomplish what they say it can, but according to Dr. Baggage, it's dangerous as hell, and that's all I can tell you.
You know, Jesse, people just don't want to believe that government is screwing them up. They just don't want to believe it.
They want to believe the government is their parents.
Their savior.
Yeah, then that they're parents, and the government is looking out for your best interests. Well, I got news for you. Government is made up of people, and people can be corrupted, and evil people can get in power. If you don't believe it, go talk to the Germans.
Jesse, our science advisor, Richard Hoagland, back from Amsterdam, where he gave a speech. He, of course, has got incredible theories. He was the one who broke the story about monuments on Mars and a number of other issues. He's got a question for you on 9/11. Go ahead, Richard.
Sure.
Richard, go ahead.
Morgan the other night. Fascinating. My question is this. Have you looked at the work of Dr. Judy Wood, who is a materials expert, PhD in structural engineering? She has a website, drjudywood.com, and a 500-page book called Where Do the Towers Go?, which is the most brilliant, penetrating analysis of what really happened on 9/11. And if you look through that site or read the book, I guarantee you what you suspect now, you will be totally convinced, and you will come away with a very different perspective on how it was done and who might have done it.
So I assume that, Doctor, she's not backing up the government story?
Not at all.
Okay.
180 degrees. You know, it's a complete lie from top to bottom. The physics of how those buildings fell and how they didn't fall is everything. And she's got 500 pages of analysis. It's all on the web, drjudywood.com. When you look at that, you will know, finally, we are not in Kansas anymore.
Okay, I appreciate that. And I will, when I get down to Mexico, I will have my wife bring it up on the computer because I'm incapable of doing that. I've never owned a cell phone, and I'm computer illiterate. And why? Because I never learned how to type.
I'm a two-finger typist myself.
Also, the other reason, my wife rarely swears, and I'll be in the other room sometime, and I'll hear a string of profanities. I'll come running in, and I'll say, what's the matter? She'll go, this damn computer. And I thought, if it can make her that angry, imagine what it'll do to me.
That's great. Jesse, what has been the highlight of your career? What is the thing that you admire the most about what you've been able to accomplish?
Well, I guess I would have to go back and tell you it was graduating class 58 from basic underwater demolition SEAL team. School,
you know,
going through what they call BUDS training, basic underwater demolition SEAL, because I was 18 years old at the time, and then I turned 19 in training, and that really made me what I am today. That was the defining moment of who Jesse Ventura would be. And I always, no matter what happens in life, when I start feeling a little sorry for myself or the going gets rough, or whatever it might be, I always think back to that and I think, man, this is nothing compared to what you went through. And so truly, I would tell you that was the defining moment, I think, in my life.
That's fantastic. Do people call you Governor, or do they just call you Jesse when they run into you?
They love to call me Jesse, and I don't mind that. But, you know, others, fine. You know, I'll tell you what's interesting. When you're in New York City in Manhattan, the people there always call me Governor. Those New Yorkers, they give you your title.
They give you the respect. Jesse, stay with us. We'll take this quick break. We're going to come back with final phone calls with you, with the governor, Jesse Ventura, former governor of Minnesota. We'll be back. Well, next hour, Alex Jones joins us as we get his perspective on world events. When we come back, we'll take final phone calls with Jesse Ventura, author of 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. We'll take your final calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And here we are back on Coast to Coast with Jesse Ventura. We'll take your final calls. Jesse, I want to tell you, you've been an absolute delight. You're welcome back anytime you want.
Well, thank you, George. I appreciate that, and I'd love to come back. And by the way, will you do me a favor? Tell Alex Jones, give him my best and tell him hello.
I will do that for you. He'll be with us in about 25 minutes, and he thinks the world of you.
Yeah, well, I like Alex, too, because he always buys me the best cigars. You can ask him that. ask him if he's got any more of them stogies he buys Jesse.
You got it. I call him the bulldog. Let's go to Zeus in St. Petersburg, Florida. Zeus, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Gentlemen, it's an honor, Jesse Ventura. The day I found out that you were a man of Czechoslovakian heritage, I was very proud.
Well, wait a minute I used to call myself a Czech until my 88-year-old aunt. Somebody asked me, what nationality are you? And I said, Czech. She spun around in the chair. She said, you're not Czech, you're Slovak.
That's what my mother tells me, too. I love it.
And so at that point, I said, I'm Slovak, because, of course, as we know, they are two separate countries, and they were merely put together by the Soviets. So they're back separate again, the Czech Republic and Slovakia, but I am Slovak.
Slovak guys are few and far between, and you made me very proud when I found that out. My question is to you, legalization of marijuana. Will it happen? Will it not happen? Yes, no. Benefits, well, downfalls. Why not?
Well, I've been out here in California now, and I was so disappointed when they didn't vote to legalize it completely. They lost 55-45. But I was told by a lot of the people out here that the bill wasn't written correctly, and this and that, and then it's going to come up again. And if it's done right, because I said, are you people crazy with the deficit that you're facing? Why would you not get a new revenue source which could help balance your budget? So hopefully it'll happen. And if it does happen, I think the first place it'll happen will be California. And I think when it does pass in California, you'll see it go like wildfire across the country. Whatever state passes it to make it totally legal, and they see how much money that state will be bringing in, then I think you'll see it go like wildfire amongst the people, because they realize then that if they get a marijuana tax, they might have to not have to raise their property taxes or their income taxes or all these other taxes, because, of course, a marijuana tax would be subjected to, you have to buy marijuana in which to pay the tax.
Jesse, Cheryl Jones, former CNN anchor, one of the few mainstream news people who understands, who gets it. Hey, she's in Knoxville, Tennessee. Must be seeing your mother, Cheryl. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. Good to talk with you again. Go ahead. You're on with Jesse Ventura.
Hello, Governor.
Hi, Cheryl. How are you today?
I'm fine. I'm a big fan of the conspiracy theory, and I want to know, and of course, Coast as well. Governor, if the show on the FEMA camps and the police state was the basis for the show being censored, what does that say about the future of our country and the direction that we're going in? What's really happening?
Well, it's certainly, Cheryl, it's not a good sign, because that's censorship. You know, whatever happened to the First Amendment here? You know, people can look at the show and they can determine on their own if they want to believe it or not to believe it. But, excuse me, to have the government come in and put, you know, whatever pressure or whatever they did to the upper echelon to get them to do that, I think it's extremely dangerous, because, you know, it's up to the public to believe it. It's up to the public to decide if they want to believe something or not. It should not be up to our government to determine what we choose to watch and look at and all that. And that's, well, it comes down to the big picture. They're destroying our Constitution, and they're taking away our Bill of Rights. And if we allow them to do that, then what does the country of the United States of America stand for anymore? And it's that simple, but it's that big also.
Exactly. Well, why not do a show on this type of censorship and the future of broadcasting in our country, both in radio, television, and print media, and the web, relating to this subject? This is a very important subject. If this is true, people need to know about it.
Oh, it's true.
And can this dark trend be reversed? How can enough information get out, and what are you going to do to help see that that happens?
Well, it is true what they did to my show. You know, on that one particular show, I was amazed. They didn't bother the 9/11 shows. They didn't bother the JFK shows. But clearly this must have hit some type of nerve for them to do it to this one particular show.
Stepped on some toes on that one, Jason.
Yeah, and so I can only, and what does it mean? It means they don't want us to know about these internment camps, obviously, because they've got in mind that obviously some of us are going to get put in them. For whatever reason, I don't know, why else would they build them? What would be the purpose? They're not going to build something that they're not going to use. It's that simple. And what does it mean for all of us? Well, again, let's shine the light on it, ask questions, and never be afraid. I believe it was Thomas Jefferson said dissension's the greatest form of patriotism.
Cheryl, thanks for your call. What's your latest with your lawsuit against TSA, Jesse?
Well, it's in a status right now where naturally they have made a motion to dismiss, which we expected. It'll probably get in front of a judge, I'm guessing. That's why I filed at the end of January while I was in Mexico, because it takes a long time, and I figure it'll get in front of a judge at some point this summer. And we'll see what happens there when a judge makes the ruling. Does it go forward? If the judge allows the suit to go forward, well, then will the government then make me take them all the way to court, or will they come at me with some type of settlement? If the judge throws the suit out, well, then absolutely we know, or at least I'll know beyond any doubt, that the Constitution and Bill of Rights are now meaningless documents.
I used to hate the color-coded system that Homeland Security used to try to alert us to all this impending doom. Unbelievable stuff.
Well, it never changes. No. I mean, every time I go, it's orange. Whatever the hell orange is, I don't even pay attention to it.
Richard is in Las Vegas, and you're up with us. Go ahead, Richard.
George, you just get better every day.
That's funny, because I have guests like Jesse Ventura.
Hey, Governor, it's an honor to talk to you.
Well, thanks, George. Appreciate it. Well, I'm sorry. It's getting late.
That's quite all right. I agree with you completely, but the problem is, what can we do? When we had the Watts riots, I lived on the outskirts, way outskirts of town, and I knew a lieutenant colonel who told me they had nuclear-tipped bullets on guns ready to go in. And those trucks were parked in a parking lot near where I lived.
Well, I don't know anything.
Do you have a plan?
I don't know anything about that, but here's what people can do. And it's, as I said, it's as simple as the nose on your face, but of course you can't see the forest for the trees. Stop voting for Democrats and Republicans. It's that simple. Stop voting, as Ralph Nader called it, for the two-party dictatorship. Vote for anyone but them. And that would be a phenomenal start right there, but it's difficult because you got the lemmings out there that, you know, march off the cliff and don't even look sideways when they do it. But spread the word. I mean, if people are angry at the government, then the best thing and the only power that they truly have is the vote. Assuring, of course, that our elections aren't fixed either, but stop voting for them and get rid of automatic voting machines and go back to a paper ballot where you have to make the little circle. After all, you've been doing that since first grade. When you took your first test, you got to fill in the little circle. If you're not capable of doing that, then you shouldn't be voting.
And you know what is amazing to me, Jesse, is first of all, they can't stand the Republican Party. They can't stand George Bush. His popularity is at an all-time low.
And, you know, we get into this mess, and then Barack Obama gets voted in. Everybody's excited about him. Now his popularity is worse than President Bush's.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
How could you get worse than Bush?
And people just go back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, and they think that these people are the saviors. Clearly, it ought to show them. Barack Obama ran on change we can believe in. Like I said, where is it?
Where is the change?
Where is it? I haven't seen any change. We're Gitmo's still there. We're now in an additional war. Not two, we're in three now.
Let's go to Dallas, Texas. Kathy, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I wonder, Jesse, I just had prayed to be able to speak with someone like you. My life has become exceedingly complex since I filed a police report on someone for putting a webcam up without my knowledge or permission. That person is claimed to be personal friends with people in very high places in government. I have been cyber stalked and physically stalked with witnesses. I mean, you know, I've been tracking.
Why? Why is that happening? Why is that happening to you?
Have you ever made a police report on someone who's politically connected?
No.
I have. Have you ever been bullied by a detective?
I don't know. Maybe that's exclusive to Texas. I'm not sure.
No, this happened. It started in another state, but it followed here. And while I was researching this individual's culture, trying to understand, you know what I mean, what may be going on here, I hit up upon Dr. Alan Sobrowski's research. And I sent an email out, and the title of that email, I didn't realize how much the government was into our, you know, monitoring emails. So I was a little naive and a little dumb, but I sent this email to many people, and it was regarding 9/11. It was an Ugly Truth podcast, March 10, Phil Turney, a USS Liberty survivor, and Dr. Alan Sobrowski.
What you did, Kathy, is you stepped on the wrong toes, and that happens. That happens all the time. Look, I would recommend you get yourself a good attorney, and you fight this. And that's probably her best way out, isn't it, Jesse?
I would think so, because, you know, I can't do anything. People need to remember, and I get it at book signings all the time. They appeal to me to help and do something. I am no longer a governor. I am simply a citizen like everyone else now. You know, I laugh because I used to have a top secret security clearance when I was a Navy SEAL, and I've been a governor and a mayor, but now that I'm neither of any of those three entities, I guess I lost my top secret security clearance. I'm trying to figure out why.
Yeah, exactly. Former mayor of Brooklyn Park, suburb of Minneapolis. I lived in Eden Prairie when I was out in that area.
Oh, did you? There, I'll tell you that. You must have the money, because that's where the money's at today, Eden Prairie. Their high school football team even has a dog.
That's fun. Well, keep in mind, I was there in 78 before I had
that. I'll tell you today, that's where a lot of the dough is in Minnesota.
Rachel sends a text in from California, wants to know what you think about Donald Trump possibly running for president.
Well, you know, Donald, I'll tell you this, he's a friend. I know Donald. I've known him for many years now, and I like him personally, but I think he's just rattling his sword, because if you go back 12 years ago, he was going to run as the Reform Party, and I stood up with him in Minnesota when he flew in there, and I backed him because I certainly didn't want Pat Buchanan, who had come in and hijacked the party like in a hostile takeover, but the Donald never did it. You know, and I just think that Donald loves publicity. He knows that if he makes motions to run for president, he'll be on every TV show and every talk show in America, like he is right now on here coast to coast. And let's face it, he's got a TV show, and that means ratings, which means money. I cannot for the life of me believe, and I might be wrong, but I can't for the life of me believe Donald would leave his empire to go do public service as the president.
No, I don't think. I don't even think he'll announce. He'll just keep doing this, get as much. He's brilliant when it comes to exposure, and that's what he's getting.
Exactly. He's getting all the press he can imagine. He's on every talk show. He's everywhere. And that's only going to do the only thing that's going to do is help his apprentice show.
Sandy is in San Juan Capistrano in California, and you're up with Jesse Ventura. Go ahead, Sandy.
Hi, George. I'm a big fan. And Jerry, first thing is, I'm very worried about you. You're very intelligent. You're very brave. I don't want him to hurt you. I'm afraid someone's going to hurt you because you're speaking the truth.
Well, he won't let anybody hurt him.
I'm sorry.
Can I ask my question? I don't want to. What do you think about the United States being a corporation and not a country on paper?
Oh, I think that it's. I think this. I think that certainly our military no longer defends us, the citizens. Our military is the strong arm of the corporations. If somebody out in the world doesn't cooperate with the corporations, they will face the wrath of the U.S. military. And I got news for you. It's been going on a lot longer and even longer than I've been alive. If you read the memoirs of Marine General Smedley Butler, a true American hero. I won't go into everything Smedley did, but he is the only guy that I know of that won two, not one, Congressional Medals of Honor. Two of them. He died in 1940, and in his memoirs, even back then, he stated the U.S. Marine Corps did not work for the people of America. What we were was the strong arm of the United Fruit Company. Or the United Fruit Corporation. Smedley said when people in Central and South America wouldn't cooperate with the United Fruit Corporation, they sent in the U.S. Marine Corps to make them cooperate. So this has truly been going on for literally a century.
Let's go to Rice, Skype line, Vancouver, Canada. Hey, Rice, thanks. Go ahead.
Hi, Jesse. Hi, George.
Hi, Rice. Hi.
I was just wondering... How do you fight a losing battle when 99% of the population is asleep at the wheel?
Well, then isn't it our job imperatively to wake them up at the wheel? And that's what I'm attempting to do with these books. You know, this winter I do tremendous reading when I'm down in Mexico. I don't watch TV. In fact, I didn't know there was an earthquake in Japan until 5 days after it happened. And I didn't know we were at war with Libya until 5 days after when I went to town. But I lost my train of thought a little bit there. What were we doing?
He's basically saying, 99% of the people follow.
Oh, and I know where I'm going now. So I did a lot of reading on Hunter S. Thompson this winter. And I love Hunter. And back in the 60s and 70s, the stuff Hunter was writing about came true later, 20 years later. So maybe if I can be so bold, maybe my job, because Hunter's gone now, maybe my job is to replace Hunter Thompson and hopefully to wake up the United States of America and its people to what's going on. But what more can we do? I mean, I'm trying to rattle every cage I can with this book, 63 documents the government doesn't want you to see.
And you know what? I bet most Americans now are beginning to feel exactly what you have seen now over the past few years. And at least they're aware, Jesse. I don't think they were aware, like I wasn't aware,
yeah,
a few years ago.
I wasn't either. Like I said, it didn't come to me till the day George Bush said we were going to invade Iraq.
And bingo, it hits us.
You know,
we've got about a minute to go here, Jesse. Let's talk a little bit about your writing and your book signings. You're going to be at the ESPN Zone at LA Live. That's going to be Tuesday night, 7:30 to 9 p.m. It's on Olympic Boulevard, those of you listening on KFI right now. And then the following day, Wednesday night, he'll be at Borders Bookstore, 7 to 9 p.m., 3700 Torrance Boulevard as well, signing what will become, I think, a bestseller. Great work on this, you and Dick Russell. And as I said, Jesse, you are welcome back anytime you want.
Well, thank you, George. And let me state this. Keep up the great work, because it's you and stations like this that exercise our First Amendment, the right to speech, the freedom of speech, because I want everyone out there to remember something. Popular speech does not need to be protected. The First Amendment is there to protect unpopular speech, but we still need that unpopular speech, and I'm sure plenty of people in the government would say the speech we did tonight was unpopular. So thank you, George, and thank your show for allowing us to get out there and voice our opinions, because it's the only thing that'll keep our country free.
You got it. Jesse Ventura. And we'll be back in a moment with Alex Jones in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And up next, Alex Jones joins us for a couple hours right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stand by. Well, if you're a regular listener of Coast to Coast AM, you know Alex Jones, award-winning documentary filmmaker, political researcher, talk show host. His websites, Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, and they are at the forefront of the exploding alternative media, rapidly becoming the media. Here's Alex Jones back 2 hours tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Alex, how are you?
George, it's great to be here. And let me tell you, it's always riveting listening, but the last 2 hours were particularly powerful. I think that's one of the best interviews I've ever heard Jesse Ventura do. And I'm glad you can get him for 2 hours. The most I've ever gotten him for is an hour and a half.
But he did say hello to you and thanks you for the cigars.
Well, you know, he's the wicked devil that introduced me to these particular Dominican Republic cigars. He just gave me a few of them on a trip once. And so I repaid the favor by sending him a whole box. And he said, "Now listen, my wife thinks that was staged, Alex. She thinks that you know, I told you to send those to me because I'm supposedly supposed to not, you know, be quitting these. So don't send any more. But if some more come, I won't mind it."
you know, he admitted that, like myself, I didn't really get into the conspiracies and the questioning of governmental movement until much later into this coast-to-coast arena, Alex, after I started listening to you. And he's admitted basically the same thing, that, you know, he was never leaning that way. You know, regardless of the Kennedy assassination, which truly was the conspiracy, you know, he said that he picked up on this really late in life as well.
Well, that is what happened. And the first time I met Jesse Ventura was in 2005. He was down here in Texas at an event, and a local producer for a radio station said, "Hey, we're having this event. Do you want to come to a video interview / radio interview with him, you know, taped on the side?" And I said, "Yes, absolutely." And so after the event that he was at, the book signing, we went, you know, back in one of the offices, and I did like a 45-minute interview with him. And he said, "Well, I've seen Loose Change, and I've actually now seen a couple of your documentaries that my son gave me, Tyrell, but I'm still not 100% convinced." But he goes, I've bought about 20 books on 9/11 from different perspectives. And he said, "When I go back down to Mexico for 6 months, I'm going to read them all." And that's basically all he does, is that and exercise and things when he's down there. And then when he came back, I basically was setting up a radio interview with him. And he said, "I'm almost ready to go public on 9/11 Truth." And then it wasn't until about a year later that I was getting him on my own show one day. And right before we went live, I said, "Well, what do you want to talk about?" And he says, "Alex, I'm ready to go public. They blew up the towers in Building 7. And so off
wow.
to the races.
He changed. Hey, what's the hot topic for you these days on your radio show?
Oh, man, there are a lot of the same important issues, George, that you cover. But, I mean, I've really got a list of them here when I knew I was coming on the show to basically talk about suppressed topics or topics that the establishment is trying to cover up, or topics where the social engineers are basically demonizing people that research them and question things that are happening. One of them is Al-Qaeda, CIA, Pentagon links to Libyan rebels and how that ties into the number one commander under bin Laden, Anwar al-Awlaki, hanging out secretly at the Pentagon. Also, with all this radiation news, you know, it turns out, going back over 3 weeks ago, you and I were both right. They now admit that the Fukushima situation was a cover-up and is now as bad as Chernobyl. Many experts are saying 4 to 10 times worse. Yep. So I want to get into some of that. But since we're talking about Ventura here, segueing, he got some into it. But you know, I was a consultant on the show and also appeared in 3 episodes per season of the 8. So I've been in 7. But really, of all the episodes I've consulted on or been a part of, the episode that had my biggest footprint in it was the police state FEMA camp special. I consulted heavily. I did a lot of the research. It was Texas, you know, where Jesse traveled with myself to one of the FEMA centers. I also traveled with him to Georgia. And so if you want the inside scoop on that censorship, Jesse, you know, doesn't really like to go all the way into it because he's involved with True TV. But I have basically got the full scoop if you want it.
Yeah, we will get into that. Also, my daughter told me yesterday, have you heard this? She said that there are apps out there now for these phones that if you know someone's cell phone number, you can find out where they are via GPS, and you can also tap into their phone and read all their text messages, download their photos. I've never heard of this before. I told her, go get me the information. I'll check on it. Have you?
Yes, it's called phone hacking. And basically, because the government under the 1996 Telecommunications Act stated that industry had basically 5.5 years under federal law for all FCC-approved cell phones, smartphones that came out later, that they have GPS triangulation in them. They're not GPS tracked themselves, but they triangulate with GPS through the cell towers that are GPS markers, and that the government be able to tap in even when the phone is off and listen to you. And so because under federal law, under the Telecommunications Act, they all have back doors for warrantless wiretapping built into them, the hackers now know how to get into those, and it is an epidemic of problems. A lot of people who have iPhones or Droids probably notice, at least with my phone every day it happens, just while I'm surfing the Internet, it'll pop up and say Google wants to be able to mark your location and then basically track you in GPS. And then if you want to allow your friends and family into that, then they can track you. But the issue is it's very, very easy to hack cell phones. In fact, a brief Charlie Sheen story. About a month ago, it came out in the news that his phone number had been released on the web by a big gossip.
Well, I remember that, yeah.
Yes, and within an hour of that happening, I called his phone to warn him, knowing that he might not have been aware of it, and the phone had been taken over by a Florida talk show host, and there was an announcement by him saying, if you want your, you know, we've hacked your phone, if you want your phone back, give me a call. And I just called Charlie at home on his home number, and I said, listen, have you noticed your phone's going crazy? He goes, yeah, it's ringing so hard, it doesn't stop. What happened? And I said, well, you can just put your name into a search engine, and, you know, it says Charlie Sheen's phone hacked or Charlie Sheen's phone number given out.
Oh,
and I said,
God.
Now it's been hacked. You know, you've got to basically wipe the phone. You're going to have to get a new phone number. So this phone hacking issue, once his number was public for an hour, and I found out about it an hour into it, so I'm not sure exactly when they hacked it, but within 1 hour of his number being public and put out on the web, it was taken over. So that's 100% true.
Wow, that's scary, Alec. That's scary.
Well, Big Brother builds these back doors so Big Brother can get in. You know, it's come out in a different security company analysis of Windows. People keep asking, why does Windows crash so much? Why does Windows have so many problems? Well, it's because Windows and every other major software system basically have government back doors built into them. That's why you'll see stories about a few years ago, a company in Canada started a satellite phone company and was selling them like hotcakes by the tens of thousands. And then they wouldn't give the U.S. government the code key to tap them. And so basically the U.S. government, if you pull up the news article, put pressure on the Canadian government to make them give them the back door. So basically the government opens back doors to everything. The government forces children to have Social Security numbers when they're, you know, younger. And so now children are 51 times more likely to have their identity stolen than adults. The government makes you use all these IDs and numbers, and then basically sets up systems where it's allowed to be stolen. And then their answer is, give us more surveillance. Give us biometric IDs to secure the old systems that they forced to be standardized.
All right, so we had Jesse on, and we talked a little bit about the FEMA camps, and you've got some more in-depth news for us. Let's start with that, Alex, if we can.
So he
had one episode that he said ran, and then anything else, they never ran after that. Is that true? Explain why that happened.
Okay, and you know, it's funny that this came up with Jesse tonight while I was listening in the last hour, because actually I wrote a list of things that I thought were important to cover tonight, because you're always kind enough to let me cover some of the subjects that I want to get into, and then you ask your probing questions. But the issue of media censorship, the Internet kill switch, the EAS alert system that doesn't just take over radio and TV transmissions with black boxes and old broadcast systems, the internet kill switch is basically a EAS takeover system of not just radio, TV, not just your smartphones, but Facebook, MySpace, Twitter. All of these systems are having government takeover hubs put in. And if you saw the article in the AP just last Friday, it was Homeland Security to use Facebook and Twitter for alerts. But then if you read what Federal News Radio put out with an interview with Homeland Security about 2 months ago, they have announced. Now, a lot of times they announce something, and if it doesn't go over well, they don't implement it. Kind of like Governor Ridge said 8 years ago on C-SPAN when he was head of Homeland Security, he said, we're going to have TSA on the streets of America. And it took many years until those actual checkpoints started, not just at the airports, but I'm kind of getting there in a roundabout way. The point is the entire media is under attack. The entire free web is under attack. The entire system of talk radio, not just with the push to bring back the fairness doctrine and restrict our free speech, but Senator Jay Rockefeller with quotes like, we'd be better off if the internet was never invented. That's some of the subjects later in the hour I want to get into, because now they're announcing that that Homeland Security and the federal government, including President Obama, are going to start breaking in with alerts on your Facebook account, on your Twitter, on your cell phone, and you won't be able to switch it off. And Homeland Security admits they want to migrate to a point where a video pops up on your smartphone or your computer and you don't have a choice. Their first trial balloon was about a decade ago when they said, oh, we want to force chips into all clock radios, mm-hmm. where if a tornado's coming or something, we can turn your radio on and give you alerts. Basically, one of the older systems is they have FEMA transmission shortwave towers in every region, and basically then it's hardwired for those systems. That's how the old EAS over radio worked, to break in and take over your device. Well, now with this high-tech system under cybersecurity, under Homeland Security, they're wiring all of these grids into the hubs, the switchers, the infrastructure for a total full-spectrum dominance takeover of media. Now, that said, you have that move and the open announcements of the internet kill switch that is basically already in place. They're now just announcing it to us, the slaves, because they know they're engineering this financial collapse and all these new wars and that we're finding out about them. So for decades ahead of this rise of world government, they've been building this suppression infrastructure. But it's not enough to just have the media shutdown switch during any civil emergency martial law scenario like we saw in Egypt. The first thing Mubarak did when he started cracking down a few months ago before he got defeated was go around and arrest all the major media, all the major political activists, not just people who had been critical of him, but people that they weren't sure about, who had particular sway, like radio hosts, TV hosts, cable hosts. And so that's what's so dangerous about what happened with Jesse Ventura. And now getting to that story, I just wanted to preface it with the background. They had 8 episodes. My fingerprints were all over this one. I took Jesse to the FEMA center that is designated for families during civil emergency under Rex 84. It's in Taylor, Texas. It's just one of many camps. And actually, in his book, he has copies of the Houston Chronicle and the Wall Street Journal going back 5 years ago when they first reported, oh, hey, there are federal bids out to build FEMA camps for civil emergencies in America. And then, of course, there's the Emergency Centers Act that basically officially turns the old military bases into designated mass holding facilities. They've already mothballed them and have them on ice, set up, ready to use. This is in the civilian inmate labor camp program on the Army's own website. All of this is hidden in plain view. So all I did was take Ventura with the documents to some of these facilities, and here's a double barbed wire fence facing in with playgrounds and swings, and we'd previously shot video of children out at this camp, because under the Rex 84 that came out in the congressional hearings in 1986 during the whole Oliver North-Iran-Contra thing, it came out, it was also in the Miami Herald, that the cover for the camps at first would be to hold illegal aliens while they were sent out of the country, but then that would be used to normalize it for the jail guards, the local communities, but then that those alien detention centers would then be used for the general public and political dissenters. And so that's exactly what's happening at that Taylor facility, just one of many that I took him to. And so then he went to the congressman's office who sponsored the bill, one of the only ones that would talk to him, and he said, well, why did you sponsor this bill? And the guy laughed at him and said, well, you think aliens are coming down out of the sky to kidnap us? And he said, no, I'm talking about a bill. Here's the bill number. You know, stop stonewalling. And the congressman looks up at the ceiling and goes, oh, I do remember. He has a southern accent. I do remember that bill. And so normally what happens
that was pretty good, by the way.
What happens with a show like Conspiracy Theory is that it has about a $350,000 per show budget. They spend a lot of money. They fly Ventura and the rest of their investigative team, including myself,
right there,
all over the country, and it's very, very expensive. So the first time it airs, it doesn't come close to, you know, paying for itself. On average, in the first season and now in the second, they air them in the next year around 50 times. And all of the other seven episodes of last year, of the second season, they've all already aired, you know, more than 20 times in the last 4 or 5 months.
It's like the History Channel does with our Ancient Alien series. They just keep running them over and over again. Okay.
Exactly, because the audiences are large, but still it takes time to air them over and over again for it to actually, you know, pay for the production cost. But
that's right.
But I took a long time getting there. The point is that we really hit the nail on the head about the threat fusion centers, how they're the local federalization spying centers, the InfraGuard, the clergy response teams, how local community leaders are being recruited to suppress the public and to sell martial law. Ventura put the whole constellation together, and it was so coherent that the night it aired, because we had a bet that it probably wouldn't air, they said this is the one episode that we think is so powerful that it might not air, that I called Jesse, I called his son Tyrell, who's also a producer on the show, and I said, congratulations, I can't believe that actually aired. But then it was supposed to air the next week before the new episode, and didn't air. And then it was supposed to air the next week again, didn't air. And so Jesse and others started making phone calls, and a lot of it, you know, that I was told from behind the scenes, I'm not allowed to reveal, but massive pressure in America, from Homeland Security, from the ADL, and of course the show actually decried the Nazis and the death camps in Germany and compared it to what could possibly happen here, so I don't know why the ADL is involved. Homeland Security, the ADL, congressmen and others put all sorts of pressure behind the scenes on True TV, parent company Time Warner, and told them, if you will not pull, if you will not air it, if you will not put it back on air, we basically, you know, won't come after you with regulations and things. And then even when True TV did, you know, made this deal with the devil, then they still, you know, came after him in the media and demonized him on CNN and a few other channels, and did some other behind the scenes things, but they had other events like things, offices being broken into, men in suits rummaging through people's trash cans in an obvious way to intimidate people involved with the show. Just all sorts of things going on in and around it that is basic harassment, but then that you can't 100% link to the government, but then again, they're outside your apartment dumping out your trash in suits and then run off when you come out on your balcony. You know, just lots of things like that happening in America trying to suppress, you know, they never countered the information. They never countered the research. They just came after the show and were successful making sure that it went in the memory hole and never re-aired again.
Jeez, we'll come back with more with Alex Jones in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, don't forget our chat tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Pacific time. Those of you who are Coast Insiders, it'll be our one-hour normal typing chat We'll resume our video chat when I'm back in Los Angeles in May, so get ready for that. But we'll be doing our chat 8 p.m. Pacific time Tuesday night for you StreamLink Coast Insiders. When we come back, we'll continue the chat with Alex Jones next hour. We'll take your phone calls with him right here on Coast to Coast AM. Alex, how do you feel about the economy? Do you think it's getting better, or do you think it's a false sense of hope?
Oh, we know it's a totally false sense of hope. We were told 6 months ago that the recession ended in June of 2009, but unemployment is increasing. The amount of Americans, over 44 million now, on food stamps is increasing. Even the head of Walmart has come out and said that inflation is going to be very serious. We see oil prices increasing. And the main driver of this, of course, is that the International Financial Order, if you go back 2 years ago, Secretary of Treasury Geithner was in China, and he said, yes, we're open to basically devaluing the dollar and ending the dollar as the world reserve currency. So the world's currency right now is the dollar, and they are forcibly phasing it out so that they can launch what the IMF and World Bank have now admitted will be a new global digital currency. We'll still have euros. We'll still have dollars. We'll still have yens and yuans. But everything will be basically set and controlled, and the interest rates will be controlled, and the currency values will be controlled by this private coterie of central banks, the very institutions on record that got rid of Glass-Steagall here in 99 and similar laws in other countries that allowed the six big mega banks to issue 1.5 quadrillion or 1,500 plus trillion dollars that, just like Bernie Madoff with his Ponzi scheme, but much larger, allowed them to basically buy up the planet's infrastructure on the way up. Then on the way down, the governments that they financed and control sign the people, whether it's the U.S. or Greece or Portugal or Iceland, onto these debts that were created by the bankers and that we don't owe predominantly. Then they make the whole budget debate about unions or welfare or Social Security when you could get rid of all of that and it wouldn't take care of even a small fraction of this fraudulent debt. And it, of course, George Soros last week and this weekend had the four-day Bretton Woods II conference where the dollar was chosen as the world reserve currency more than a half century ago. He met there in New Hampshire at the same hotel and told Bloomberg that the dollar is already been replaced as the world reserve currency, and they've moved to oil and a basket of other currencies. And so that's why you see commodity prices increasing. And listening to Bloomberg radio that was there reporting over the weekend, I listened quite a bit, and the very banking heads that have engineered all of these problems, well, it's good for them. They're all making record profits and consolidating the economy. It's bad for all of us, but they agreed. They said there was a consensus that the dollar is to be phased out. Now, the only question is, what is the timetable? And people say, well, why do I care if the dollar is not the world currency, you know, used to buy oil, gold, and things around the world? Well, America's been deindustrialized by NAFTA and GATT and the globalist plan by design to make us dependent. And they're moving us into what they call at the UN a post-industrial society. They don't want us to be prosperous. They don't want us to be wealthy and individually independent. They want us to be beholden. They want us to have to go along with the nanny state. So we're in a long depression, similar to the one Japan's been in for 15 years, and they are just going to continue to ratchet it down while coming out with this nanny state. I'm sure you saw the Chicago Tribune, where many of their school districts do not allow the parents to pack any school lunch, and the school administrators are on the news saying parents can't be trusted to make lunches. The state must do it. And so this whole country, this whole planet is being turned into a giant prison planet. And in a prison, they don't allow you to have your own car, to have your own garden, to have your, you know, raise your children as you see fit. In a prison, similar to what North Korea is like, the population just becomes a human resource for these globalist social engineers. And it's so sick to watch the very authors of our pain and our financial and economic suffering now posing as the saviors from, you know, calling myself 15 years ago a kook, or making fun of you a decade ago, and many others, and G. Edward Griffin, when we were just covering their own documents and their own admissions, when we talked about a private banking system running a world government. And now it's just out in the open. They're saying, oh, there is a world government, but we just got the idea for it. And, yes, it will be run by some private banks, and they'll control everything that's going on, you know, in your nation, but that's just the way it is. And if you don't like it, we're going to hold you financially hostage, like the Treasury Department did in October 2008 when they told congressmen and senators in closed meetings, they since went public, that if you don't give the banks unlimited trillions, we will have the president declare martial law in America. So that's the essence of martial law. We're already under a soft type of martial law where, you know, when the globalists need to, they drop the hammer and basically hold everybody hostage because they have financial control if we don't do exactly what they say. But then when we give in to them, and when Congress gave in to them, things only got worse. So it's going to be rough if we stand up to them and audit the Fed and abolish it and kick these foreign bankers out of here that took over in 1913. But it's going to be even harder if we continue to let this Hydra basically pull us down into the abyss.
Do you trust George Soros at all?
Wow. You know, all I know is George Soros, anybody can pull this up, gave an interview with 60 Minutes. And the interview speaks for itself, that when he was in Eastern Europe as a young man, he changed his name, took a fake name, and I wouldn't blame any Jew in Europe for doing that. What I do blame him for is that he then helped the Nazis go around and take people's possessions and then load them up to be taken away. And he told 60 Minutes and others that, well, if he didn't do it, somebody else would have, so he doesn't feel guilty. This is a serious sociopath who has all these big lobbying arms. Just 2 weeks ago, Politico got the internal documents from one of George Soros's admitted front groups and Media Matters, and they said, we are going to destroy and sabotage the alternative media, starting with Fox News and talk radio and, quote, other conservative sites. And that means anybody that doesn't go along with their program. And if you read their site, on an almost daily basis, they savage me and attack me. And it's very, very scary to have a guy who isn't even American-born, who was a Nazi collaborator on record, here in America, trying to demonize myself and others and trying to shut us up and going after people's sponsors. It is very, very scary, but we have to stand up against this bully or the Republic will fall. I don't think George Soros is the heart of the New World Order, but he is one of their very dangerous generals out on the front line. But if you look at Cass Sunstein, who's an acolyte of George Soros, and of course Soros is one of the biggest contributors and masterminds behind President Barack Obama. You know, Cass Sunstein wrote public papers saying, if you don't believe in man-made global warming, you should be arrested. He said, but if we can't start arresting 9/11 truthers and people that don't believe in man-made global warming, were two examples. He also gave a bizarre example and said, if you believe that 30 minutes of sunshine is good for you, that's a conspiracy theory. I mean, these guys want to be God. He said, you should be, you know, arrested for that. But he said, bare minimum, we should tax and regulate these radio hosts and these websites. Basically, any media that they don't totally agree with, or any media that allows different guests to be on or different ideas. We were talking about censorship earlier. Anything that isn't part of kind of a mainline establishment view, they want to shut it down. And that's why I totally agree with Governor Ventura when he thanked you, George. And that's why I always thank you. It's not a exercise in groveling. It's an exercise in thankfulness and being appreciative. Just like every day when I look at my two daughters and my son and they're healthy and happy, I literally almost cry and thank the Creator that I've been blessed when other families have children with cancer, diseases. I also thank the Creator for people like you and other venues of true free speech, because you know it took courage to even ask that question. You're a very savvy, smart guy. You know what he does to people. I recognize your courage. And like Ventura said at the end of the last hour, people, you better appreciate venues like Coast to Coast AM and George Norrie and the other weekend host. You had better appreciate Infowars.com and the films I've made that are free online, like The Obama Deception, Fall of the Republic, Endgame. Folks, you better realize that they're openly in the news again today. Internet kill switch bill won't die. But then when you read deeper, they've already got the kill switch in place. This is happening. The TSA is really sticking their hands down men, women, and children's pants. They really are putting us in radiation bakers. The federal government, and later I want to go over some of these numbers if you have time, George. The federal government first said there wasn't any radiation from Fukushima. The Japanese government said the same thing. Now a month and a day into this tragedy, they now admit it's as bad as Chernobyl or worse. It is only getting worse, and the radiation that comes over in, quote, low levels continues to build up day after day as it stacks up. And I actually have the printouts here, George, from the EPA. They've put out a new public advisory that they are now raising. Listen to this, folks. And only alternative media would cover this. No mainstream media has covered this except for a few California newspapers, God bless them, like the San Francisco Chronicle. But it's right there on the EPA's own website. The new standards say that they will allow a 1,000-fold increase for exposure to strontium-90. That's exactly what's coming over here. A 3,000 to 100,000-fold hike for exposure to iodine-131. That's what's in the milk in 17 states, just where they've tested. And almost a 25,000 rise for exposure for radioactive nickel-63. Those are all the lighter isotopes, but still very radioactive and deadly, that are showing up. And get this, in the 17 states where it's been found in the milk and produce and water, including 181 times safe levels of radioactive iodine at the University of Berkeley at the State Research Facility, the federal government, now listen to me, folks, is on record a month into this, will not release any of not just their background radiation levels, but the actual isotope meters, because a regular Geiger counter doesn't even pick that up. It takes very expensive devices, very complex devices that our submarines and aircraft and nuclear bases all have. Europe is reporting a lot higher levels of radiation, so the EU is raising what they say is safe. So basically, they're waving a magic wand and saying, we're going to, because radiation levels are going up, as this thing continues to have multiple meltdowns and spew uranium, plutonium, you name it, into the air, they're just waving a magic wand and saying, we're saying it's okay for you. Okay, radiation levels are higher. We're not going to release our federal numbers. We're going to make a few universities and states release it. The mainstream media is going to basically cover up this fact and not amplify this key information as a true public service.
And is that omission of ignorance, of omission of, deliberation? Do they really want to just deliberately omit this stuff?
They want to deliberately omit it, and I'm so glad that you just brought that up, George, because there's a whole other side to this. It just came out yesterday that in Simi Valley, back in
not,
the 50s.
Not too far from the studio in Los Angeles, as a matter of fact.
And that ABC News report admits that for decades, the biggest meltdown in history up until Chernobyl, and over 200 times worse than Three Mile Island, a total meltdown at a facility there in Southern California was kept secret. Now it's in ABC News. So there's your proof right there. Simi Valley has a meltdown in the 50s. In fact, I can pull the article up. Anybody can. Just type in Simi Valley meltdown, and you'll get ABC News and Associated Press. It took them decades to even begin to tell the public. But let me expand on that. Fukushima, Chernobyl, they're not the only sources. It is confirmed, and I actually have the documents here. We have time to go over them. It is confirmed. I want listeners to hear this. This is not hyperbole. That in all 50 states, in over 70% of the cities and towns, since the 1950s, what is called sodium fluoride is put in the water. And just type fluoride cancer in, 7-time increase in bone cancer in men that drink fluoride, 3-time increase in women. Men are more susceptible, but that's a side issue. right around 71% to be accurate, of counties, cities, municipal water supplies have it added. And it is the main source is mined out of limestone deposits all over North America, but we also buy a lot of it from China. But the limestone deposits where they're mining are generally at current uranium mining facilities, because they find uranium and other radioactive isotopes, strontium and other things, in the limestone that they get the phosphates for, that's the main ingredient in crop fertilizer. But if they put it on the crops, it'll kill them. And so they take it, and on average it has about 150 chemicals in it. It's authorized by the EPA to have over 350. But guess what it turned out, and this broke 3 months ago in Texas, guess what's in the fluoride powder? Uranium and other radioactive isotopes. And here are the news headlines. KENS5 San Antonio. Contaminated water in major Texas city has radioactive elements. Here's another one. Raw story. Revealed Texas officials covered up dangerously radioactive tap water for years. Same headline, Dallas Morning News. Then I did more research on this. Turns out that there are similar cover-ups in states all over the U.S., and in Europe. And so what happened is the feds came into the state of Texas several decades ago when their own state water officials were testing it, saying we're finding in some cases 10 times, 20 times, over 100 times normal levels of uranium and other isotopes in the water. And the feds said to the state, you know, people who say they can't suppress this stuff, they did for over 20 years, they said cover it up. So the news is reporting that this is in our water and it's being added and that there was a cover-up, but they don't go the step further that it's public research, because they're all in the news going, we don't know why it's in every major town. We don't know why it's in all the major water. We don't know why it's in all these states when it's not naturally in the water table or in the reservoir. It's because they're adding radioactive isotopes to the water. And I interviewed Dr. Busby of England. He's the top BBC advisor, also advises the EU. He said many of his colleagues believe that they're doing this on purpose, because nothing reduces fertility in men and women like radioactive isotopes, namely uranium. And the sperm count in the U.S., but also in every other, they even have city-by-city studies in England, every city that has this being out of the water has higher sperm count drops than nearby areas that aren't. And that's why, on average, the West has an 87% sperm count reduction. Folks, of course they've got Ann Coulter out saying the Japanese ought to be thankful for the radiation. They're not going to get cancer. Of course they've got the big globalist George Monbiot out saying, you know, he loves nuclear now that the plant blew up. These are bizarre statements, but they're making them because, ladies and gentlemen, it is the policy of the eugenicist population reducers. You think this stuff starts and stops with vaccines or GMO? They are putting, knowingly, radioactive isotopes in every major fluoridated water supply, and fluoride is only the cover name. There's lead, mercury, arsenic, and hundreds of other things being added as well, but all of that is a cover for the radium, the strontium, the uranium. You heard it here, folks, and it's hiding in plain view. They are putting radiation in your water.
What a great way for population control, Alex, huh?
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm begging you, if you love your family, I'm begging you. Now, this isn't a game. This isn't entertainment. This isn't a joke. This is real. I know a lot of you are probably shocked by this information. If you'll just search Texas covered up radiation in water or in tap water, you will literally get hundreds of Texas TV, radio, and newspapers. And when you read the articles, you've got to read for like an hour just to find any news that got it right and said, oh, it's the fluoride mined out of phosphate. Because the first thing you'd ask is not just why did they cover it up, that's admitted, or why in some cases is it over 100 times safe levels. The bigger question is how is it getting there?
Yes, and why?
Exactly. And why.
Stay with us. Alex Jones, next with your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Going to take your phone calls this hour with the Bulldog, Alex Jones. Why do I call him the Bulldog? Because once he bites, he doesn't let go. That's why. Actually, when he chases a story, he goes after it. until he gets it. We'll be back in a moment with Alex Jones on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Alex Jones. We're going to take your calls here on Coast to Coast AM in just a second here. Alex, of all the stories you've covered over the past 5 years, which one stands out as the just the strangest or the biggest story you've done?
Yeah, wow. You know, I get asked that question quite a bit on the street, and it's a great question. There are so many. I mean, just the London Guardian last week had the headline, "How a Big U.S. Bank Laundered Billions from Mexico's Murderous Drug Gangs," and it reports that two of the biggest banks in the United States admitted to the feds, but then only had to pay a $100 million fine on $376 billion of laundered drug money in the two big banks.
What a deal, right?
Yeah, I mean, I did the math on that. That's, 0.3%? And, of course, the banks get to loan it out at interest. So
Times 10.
So that would be like if I went and robbed a bank and was coming out with bags of money to load a van, and the cops pulled up and they said, "Mr. Jones, hold on. We need to give you a $3,000 fine on that $1 million. That's what $100 million comes out to.
And you can keep the money, Alex.
Exactly. So, if I robbed a bank, the cops catch me and they say, "Stop, Mr. Jones, you're allowed to steal that million. You just got to pay a $3,000 fine and then you can keep the money." That's the same math of a $100 million fine on $376 billion. And the two big banks, Wells Fargo and its parent company, did not, or Wachovia and its parent company, Wells Fargo, did not even get in any trouble except for having to pay the fine. And I think the biggest story overall is the fact that so many people are waking up. But then there's a dichotomy or a paradox for the people that aren't waking up. They're just getting deeper in denial. Bloomberg reported, I think, one of the most shocking stories last year, that in the same year they got rid of Glass-Steagall, 1999, to allow the big banks to do this, major insurance companies, and they named them, met with Veterans Affairs and said, "Look, we've got World War II vets through Gulf War vets. And you were in the military, you know, they say to you, hey, take a sign here, take part of your paycheck out and put it in a death benefit, an insurance policy for your widow or widower." And the big bank signed a secret deal that didn't become public until 2010 to steal all the death benefits of troops when they die in combat or when they die of natural causes later. And they're not paying the people their insurance money, their life insurance money. And when the big bank-owned insurance companies got caught doing this, they said, "Look, it's completely legal. We signed the secret deal with the federal government." So I think the overall message is the government, as Jesse Ventura said, has turned evil. That doesn't mean the guy delivering mail to your house or the you know, state employee or the federal employee or the FBI agent is necessarily a bad person. If it's the IRS, that's another subject, or the ATF. But the overall driving force, just like in Nazi Germany, many Germans were naive. They were slowly seduced into going along with corruption. Same thing with the Soviets, or they were intimidated and went along with it. Nations in history always go bad. Empires always go bad. The average life expectancy of a nation is less than 100 years. The Roman Empire only lasted about 200 years in its first incarnation and then later declined. No nation has really ever lasted more than about 250 years, and the United States is 235 years old. Corruption just gets into place. It recruits more corrupt people under it. They bring all these armies of miscreants in, and then you get a corrupt culture like Mexico or North Korea. There's a lot of different variants and flavors of it, but there's no doubt that if you live long enough, you're going to get cancer or have a heart attack. Well, it's the same thing. If your country is around long enough, it's going to get tyranny. And we can still go into the doctor. It's called the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and get this cancer removed. but it's metastasizing right now. No one can deny it. And if we don't gut up and get out of denial and admit that our country has a globalist cancer growing in its breast, this nation will go the way of so many other banana republics. And that's why this show is so important, reaching 16 million people.
Alex, what's new with the websites? Then we'll take calls.
Oh, I mean, we're just constantly covering the latest developments. Obviously, if you go back 6 months ago, it was my employee, Michelle, one of our customer service people at Infowars.com, up in the front office, that I was covering the TSA, sticking their hands down people's pants, and the radiation fryers, the microwave ovens, the body scanners. And she ran out, you know, to me during a break and said, Alex, can I talk to you? And I said, sure. And she said, you know, I was on vacation last week. And I said, yeah. You went skiing in Colorado with your 8-year-old daughter and your husband and your year-old daughter. And she said, yeah, I didn't want to tell you about this because it's embarrassing, but flying back to Austin from Denver, they first groped me, grabbed my crotch, went around my waistband, grabbed my buttocks, and then they tried to have a man, much less a woman would be bad, feel up my 8-year-old, and I said, no, get a woman. And then they even groped the year-old baby, and I've seen her children up at the office. This is just unbelievable. And that video got posted by Drudge, and then for a month straight, every day he carried our articles as we collated the horror stories. We've all seen them, the video of them strip-searching the 5-year-old and the rest of it. There's a new incredible video up on Infowars.com right now, and YouTube has been pulling it. There's nothing graphic other than the fact that it's a 6-year-old girl. 6-year-old girl groped, then drug tested by TSA, and they take this tiny little girl, and I have a 6-year-old daughter, and you hear her saying, I don't want to do this, and they shove her in there, and this big TSA woman goes on and on with her hands between her legs, her hands in her pants, and she's just wearing little tight blue jeans and a little T-shirt. There's obviously nothing there, and it just goes on and on and on. And then they say, now we're going to take you over here and drug test you, and they lead her off camera. And it's all on video, and it is just unbelievable. And I just want to challenge everybody to go to Infowars.com and get this video and copy it over to your servers before they pull it down, because we're constantly having to – people are copying it all over the web. We're constantly having to update it as the TSA, the federal government, that's who we're guessing is doing it, is in there basically trying to memory hold this. And basically TSA is rolling out on highways. They're setting up checkpoints. They have high-powered radiation scanners, X-rays that they make people drive under. They have the Army involved now. We have local newscasts in Tennessee and New York showing this. They are going to basically set the precedent to put federally funded goon squads on the streets, at train stations, at bus stations. It's already begun, at highway checkpoints, forcing you through this. You're not just going to avoid this by not flying. This is to break our will. This is slave training, basically concentration camp training. And if Americans will put up with this, they'll put up with anything.
All right, Alex, thank you. Let's go to Wilmington, Delaware. Tom, get us started. East of the Rockies, you're on with Alex Jones.
Hi, George. Great show tonight.
Thank you,
Alex,
Tom.
You're my favorite journalist. I was first introduced to you about 7 years ago by George, listening to the Bohemian Grove show.
So was everybody else.
And I wanted to ask you, are you familiar with this Harold Camping of Family Radio out of Oakland, California, and his work?
He's the one that's putting up these billboards, Alex, that say Judgment Day is May 21st. I don't know if you've seen that, but we've had them on. But, yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah. Alex, I've been watching this guy for about 20 years, and I don't think people realize how serious a Bible student this guy is. His work is excellent. And you're the first journalist I've ever heard talk about the corruption in the Christian church and how it's been infiltrated. And yeah, I was wondering, would you take a really in-depth look at this guy's writings?
Absolutely. And I've been asked a lot of questions about this, about these billboards, about Judgment Day. And I'm sure that the person means well. And unfortunately, who knows, they may be right. You know, I had a lady.
Whoop. Who'd we lose? Tom, you with us or Alex? Well, yeah, we lost Alex. Tom, so get him back on, would you? And we'll get him right back on to answer the rest of your questions. But getting back to Mr. Campine, as we have interviewed now some of his representatives, where they talk that May 21st of this year is Judgment Day. That's it. It'll be all over for those people, and they'll be gone. And then October 21st, he says that the rest of us that stay behind, that's it for us. And it's a very strange story. We're going to continue to monitor that situation all the way and see what happens, to be sure. I'll take some more calls with you until Alex gets back on with us. Vancouver, Canada, we go. Hey, Candy, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I appreciate both you and Alex immensely. Thank you both very, very much. I just want to say basically take courage, America, and see beyond the fear, you know, that's out there. I've seen pictures of some of these guys that are supposed to be reaping havoc in the world. Maurice Strong and some of the quote-unquote elites. And they're a bunch of old farts, you know, quite frankly. Like, these guys, literally, I mean, I'm 5'4" and a half, and I think I could take them. You know, I don't know, when I look at this fear and when I look at the fear-mongering and the power-mongering that these guys are promoting, if we would actually look and really get to know who the enemy is, I think it might be a breath of fresh air for us.
Okay. Well, you may be right. You may be right about that indeed. Let's go to Brian in Columbia, South Carolina. Brian, go ahead.
Hey, George. I just wanted to say I'm an economics major down here at the University of South Carolina. And, you know, two things bug me about this. A, all of my professors, if you learn economics, it trains you to be a Republican. All of my professors are Democrats. So bottom line, that bugs me. But the second thing, there's this 18th century idea of Jeffersonianism. Mm-hmm. And if you go off of that, I can't think of the name right now, but there's this idea where you need to keep a certain amount of population level. And what I wanted to tell Alex is, you know, I agree with him wholeheartedly, where there, you need to kill off your population to keep, you know, your economy running. So I don't doubt, you know, the radiation in the water or these other things that are going on. And I also wanted to say about Jesse earlier tonight, you know, the thing that might scare the whole U.S. government is that this is a person who has credibility, you know, and he speaks to the public and we listen to him because he does, you know, he has hold public office. And what does he have to hide behind, you know?
Well, he's a truth seeker, no doubt about that. And this push, Alex, you're back with us, to control the world's population. This has been a globalist agenda for how long?
If you go back to Galton in the 1850s, he was a cousin of course, the individual that created the theory of evolution, Darwin. Galton basically was a minion of the royal family who already believed in royal bloodlines and elitism. And so they developed the idea of eugenics, and they basically picked up on the ideas from 100 years earlier of Malthus. And Malthus also was a minion of the royal crown, and he said that they should spread diseases among the poor population to kill them. He predicted that by 1800, the world would overpopulate and everybody would starve to death and die, and that basically it was survival of the fittest, even before Darwin came out with that, that the elites had a right and a duty to enslave and kill off the lesser humans. And then that got codified into social Darwinism, where the big robber barons, you know, even 110 years ago, would write editorials in the newspapers saying, look, whatever we do to you, it's because we're the elite. We got here because we're the elite. And so we're doing you an evolutionary favor by enslaving you or killing you or doing this to you. So basically, the religion of the global rulers is the perfect excuse for their sadomasochistic, psychopathic, sociopathic tendencies, that no matter how many horrible things they do, they're doing us a favor by culling the useless eaters. And we hear these terms from Ted Turner. We hear these statements from the UN, Prince Philip, Prince Bernhard, the founders of the World Wildlife Fund, Prince Charles. I mean, they constantly talk and write. State Department Memorandum 200 talks about using wars and famine and disease to reduce population. The UN has been caught in the mid-90s in mainstream news adding hormones to tetanus shots that then create an autoimmune response to the hormone and sterilize the women. And so population reduction is going on. And so many yuppies and so many middle-class people are trained that there's too many people in college, so they'll say, okay, there are too many people. Well, what those yuppies don't get is you're having radioactive isotopes added to your water. You're having GMO foods designed to reduce your fertility and to give you cancer. You're having deadly additives put in your vaccines. You're going to get the Guillain-Barré statistically if you continue to take the vaccines. You're going to get the early onset of diabetes linked to it. You're going to get the autoimmune responses associated with early onset of Alzheimer's that's now epidemic. This is attacking all of us, and so many people feel like they're elites. And by the way, George, I've probably been on your show 60-plus times in the last 7-8 years, and I've always heard these legends of when key points are made that phones disconnect, and phones do disconnect on their own, but I'm on a landline. The disconnect button is on the cradle of the phone, so I didn't hang up, and I was getting to that comment about doomsday. I mean, I don't think it's coming then, but with all the Hadron superconducting super colliders and all the super science technologies the globalists have, there's no telling what could happen any day, but I do find that very interesting that the phone disconnected.
All right. Yeah, I know. It seems that they always – it happens to Jordan Maxwell when he's on all the time, Alex. He just gets clipped all of a sudden.
Well, I apologize, but I didn't hang up.
No, I know you don't. You know, it's just that they're listening in on you.
Well, no wild horses couldn't drag me away, but I guess they broke my train of thought when that fellow was talking about Judgment Day or whatever. I don't want to criticize that other group because I don't know enough about them, but I've read about it in the news. But what's your view on that, George?
Well, there's no doubt that something is afoot here. I want to get Betty Martini on the program. Do you know her? Have you had her on yours?
Oh, absolutely. She gets into aspartame and the brain tumors, and now they admit the cell phones are causing brain tumors. And she gets into the MSG, which they know causes brain cell death. And is a look, so many of these food additives were put in there in the 30s, 40s, and 50s because they tested them on lab rats, and I've got the studies on MSG from the 30s, and they knew. And they rolled it out at the World's Fair. I forget the exact year, but I was just reading the documents today in the 1930s. They knew that MSG was very addictive. Many of poisons like aspartame, like MSG, are very addictive. And so they put additives in that are poisonous but also addictive, just like nicotine, a poison.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. Alex, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment with you. We're going to take final phone calls. Alex's websites, if you haven't been there yet, Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And, of course, you can always email me at George@coasttocoastam.com. Our next Coast to Coast program, Lawrence Joyce joins me as we talk about strange things going on the planet. And when we come back, we'll take final phone calls with Alex Jones right here on Coast to Coast AM. Alex, anything new with the Bilderbergs?
Well, the big news with the Bilderberg Group is that just 5 years ago, you were the only big national talk show host, and going back 7-8 years ago, who would cover Bilderberg. But now, I've got to give credit where credit's due. Now for about 3 years, the Drudge Report carries Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com's coverage every June. And the word is they're going to be meeting in Europe, but we're still nailing down the exact location. In fact, I'm tempted to even go to the event this year that they're going to be having. But more and more, the Bilderberg Group, through the Davos Forum and through other public events like the event George Soros had over the weekend at Bretton Woods 2, they're just admitting their agenda out in the open. But we'll be covering Bilderberg 2011, and I may even be there in person, and we do have some sources, not Bilderberg Group members, but some of their assistants inside through Daniel Estulin and through Jim Tucker. And it's invaluable information, because the information we get out of Bilderberg within a year to two always comes true, because this is a steering committee at the highest levels of this system, and they are really trying to openly come out of the closet, come out of the shadows, and sell us on their world government as the solution to all our problems, when they are the authors of our main problems.
Let's go to Brian in Sacramento, California. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, thanks, George Mark, for letting me on. I can't believe I'm talking to my two favorite guys in the world right now. I just wanted to say that a lot of people get scared of Alex, but I think he's a really good person. I just saw on the website the other day this Wake Up or Waco. I mean, he literally got a church built with all the Davidians, and everybody just thought those people were crazy, and they were Americans who just wanted to believe in God, and that's what America's about. So that's all I really wanted to say. I just wanted to, you know, people get scared of Alex, but he's really a really good person. That's
well, to clarify, I, back in like 95, 96, 97, the Davidians would talk to me, the survivors, on my local Texas show, because they could hear it in Waco off the local FM I was on, because Waco's north of Austin. And I kept going out there and bringing 2020 and Extra and all these shows, and then Clive Doyle, one of the survivors, a really nice guy, said, yeah, we're going to have the memorial this year, but all we have is this shack to have the memorial. And so I went on the air and said, you know, I wish some citizens would get together and build them a little bit bigger shack so they could at least have the 20 survivors or so in it. And then my listeners got out of control and built a huge building that seats 400 people out there as a memorial to that massacre. So just an amazing example of what the people can do.
Do you see some kind of false flag down the horizon?
Absolutely, George. If you look at two different White House advisors, one of them, Robert Shapiro, told the Financial Times of London last year, he said, President Obama, if he doesn't have a new 9/11 or Oklahoma City, is not going to be able to get his entire agenda through. And now other White House advisors have basically said the same thing. And if you look at the media hyping 160 buried al-Qaeda nukes, if you look at the government hyping that Gaddafi might stage some type of terror attack, it's a perfect way to legitimize the expanding police state here domestically, but also to launch new wars. And we know the Gulf of Tonkin was staged to get us into Vietnam. We know about Operation Northwoods. We know, I mean, you asked me earlier what the biggest story in the last 5 years was, and really I couldn't think of anything, because all I was thinking about was 9/11 9.5 years ago, and Building 7 being blown up in front of everyone, and the police on CNN video saying, get back, they say they're going to blow the building up. I mean, the globalists got away with killing Kennedy in front of us in broad daylight. They got away with blowing up Building 7 on 9/11 in front of us. But thanks to you and countless others, people are now aware of false flag events. And I love the point that whenever Ventura was on earlier, just to be brief, so there's more calls, he said, you know, there's either three different ways it happened. They knew it was coming and let it happen, or they were involved in it, or they're the biggest idiots in the world. And what you said is the answer. When you study these rogue networks, these private globalist mercenary organizations that are offshore, they use America, they use Europe to fund them, to provide militaries for them. But what they are is rogue, mole, private intelligence agencies within governments that are then working with the terrorists to protect them and allow these attacks to take place. I mean, take Anwar al-Awlaki. Here's Fox News, October 20th, 2010. It was also in the Associated Press.
And he's an al-Qaeda chief, right?
Yeah, exactly. The Washington Post says now he really is number one. He's the guy calling the shots. Nobody's heard from bin Laden, but he's debatably in the top three. Some say number one. Here's the headline. Al-Qaeda leader dined at the Pentagon just months after 9/11, and somebody inside the Pentagon leaked this. The Pentagon admits it's true, but wants to basically arrest, like Bradley Manning, whoever released it. The guy that ran the Fort Hood shooter on record, the guy that ran the underwear.
Well, I think we lost you again, Alex. Well, we'll get you right back again. Tommy, jump on it. Alex is having something. I got to tell you, folks, truly amazing. He begins to talk about something very controversial, and then he's gone. Let's try Green Valley, California. Deb, let's get your comments. Go ahead, Deb.
Hey, George. It's Deb from Green Valley, Fairfield, California. I'm calling because, and I fully expect to be cut off myself. speaking of rogue mole intelligence.
Somebody's out there clipping away tonight, that's for sure.
Well, that totally sucks. Not great verbiage, but the reason I called is because I called my cousin to listen to the program. It was a little after midnight, and you had just teased Alex was coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I left a message on my cousin's phone that Alex Jones' portion, the 2 hours, was going to be happening, and then maybe she could listen to the rerun of Jesse Ventura. And I left this message on her phone. I don't know where she is. But then within about a few moments, really, I turned around. I was in my bedroom. Now, I was hanging up clothing. I was in my bedroom. I turned around, and my telephone was on.
It was on?
It was just like, I mean, I had hung up. Everything was fine. And I had made the phone call about maybe 10, 15 minutes prior. And then all of a sudden, I looked, and I went, oh, my God. So I kind of, if and when you get Alex back, I thought I would be cut off before now.
Well, he's back, Deb. He's popped back on. Well, Alex, I'm now convinced somebody's playing around with your line.
I am looking at the phone. I've been using this phone. I did just move a few weeks ago for 2 weeks. It works perfectly. I've done probably 20 other radio interviews and not had one problem. It is sitting 5 feet from me, and it's the type of phone where the cradle has the hang-up button. And right when I'm talking about the admissions now that Al-Qaeda, I mean, this is now in the Wall Street Journal headline, the core of the rebels is Al-Qaeda, Mujahideen. The government's now telling us Al-Qaeda are the good guys against Gaddafi, who 6 years ago signed a peace deal with the U.S. and England. I'm covering this key information, and I get disconnected for a second time. Now, maybe it's an accident, but this has never happened in my dozens and dozens of interviews. I mean, how many times have I been on your show, George? Does anybody know?
Countless.
I mean, it's got to be over 60, 70, because I can go up to coasttocoastam.com and kind of look at the old guest areas and every year.
You know, and even the little one-hour spurts, they don't count those as numbers. So you're right. You could be up that high.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be above 60 or so. So all I know is this is bizarre. But getting back to what the caller was just saying, G. Gordon Liddy, you know, talk show host, I remember 10 years ago listening to him talking about, and then I went and looked up the news articles on it, and he was being accurate. He was an FBI agent, and he said that the main wiretaps they use are not even so much tapping your phone when you're on your landline or your cell phone now, but what they do is they just dial in, and the FBI has systems where they activate the phone even when it's in the cradle, and now it's a wiretap inside your house. And so that could be a malfunction with her phone. But when it's admitted that the government has over a million roving wiretaps going at any one time with computers basically recording most of the conversations in the country, then they'll put a random wiretap in and turn your cell phone on and just listen to what you're saying and doing. This is all mainstream news, but I don't want to, I mean, even go down this road in all these interviews I never have. But I just hope I can finish up the next 12 minutes here, George, because I'm so honored to be here.
All right, let's go to Bemidji, Minnesota. Sue's been waiting, and now Sue is on. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. I just want to let you guys know how grateful we all are for the work that you do, and also Governor Ventura. I really appreciate you having him on. And one of the things that I was really hoping that Governor Ventura and you guys could look into is the connection between the FBI, I guess they call them the finders, and the drug and child sex trade.
Now, I've actually researched this. For those that don't know, what was it, in 1987, the Washington Post and Washington Times reported that there was an FBI raid after, in Florida, they picked up three little kids in a dirty van on dirty mattresses, disheveled. And when they busted the guy, he said, look, here's my CIA credentials. I'm about to fly these kids out of the country. and the FBI then raided the Finders facility, this child charity. This was in the news in D.C., and it was satellite uplinks, CIA-run, giant child kidnapping operation. And since then, it's come out, even in the Chicago Tribune, that DynCorp, Halliburton, and other groups have been involved in the sex trade and the trafficking in women and children. I mean, that sounds incredible, folks, but I wouldn't say it if it wasn't in a source. As George has said, I'm a collector of information. 99% of what I cover is something that I can completely document. And I read earlier out of the London Guardian how big U.S. bank laundered billions from murderous Mexico drug gangs. Here's Bloomberg. Banks financing Mexico drug gangs admitted in Wells Fargo deal. Here's another headline. I mean, but the incredible thing is about phones. I do have a story that is that 1% where it's a personal experience. George, if I've got about a minute because I know you want to take more calls, I can tell you an incredible harassment story.
Sure, go ahead.
And I may have told this before, but I've told it on my own broadcast. At the 2008 Bilderberg, where we had security walk up to us 10 minutes before it happened and say, hope nobody pulls fire alarms because we'll arrest anybody that pulls fire alarms. This is the day before they officially shut the hotel down and kicked us out. And then I go in my room to call you or for you to call me to be on the show, and Tom calls, and right as we go live, a minute into you interviewing me, the alarm goes off, and then I go downstairs after they ruin the interview, and the head of security comes over and threatens me and says, if you do one more thing, I'm going to have you arrested, even though I wasn't talking.
Oh.
3 days later, when that event ended, and Obama and Hillary were at the event, President Obama and then-Senator Hillary Clinton, Bilderberg was over. We were catching our flight in a couple hours. There was a steakhouse there by Dulles Airport nearby the Bilderberg meeting place, and my wife called. And I'm sitting there eating a big ribeye steak with my guys, and she says, hey, honey, my dad's in the hospital. She gave me the medical issues. He was in bad shape. Thank God he got better. But she gave me the specific medical issues on my cell phone. I talked to her about 3 minutes, and I said, honey, I got to finish this steak and get in the car and get over to the airport and drop off the rental car. I said, I love you. I'll be home in about 4 hours. And she said, okay. And I said, get to the hospital, see your dad. And the globalists always strike when you're psychologically weak. So I hang up the cell phone. I go back to my ribeye and my Sam Adams beer, and I'm sitting there with my three crew guys, and they were all witnesses to this, and my wife calls back 3 minutes later crying. And I said, what's wrong, baby? What's wrong? And she goes, I got another one of those calls, because we've had these off and on probably 10 times. A woman calls up and says, hi, I'd like to talk to Alex. My wife says, well, he's gone. He's out of town. Can I take a number? And she goes, well, why, where is he? And she goes, you know, to make her suspicious, my wife goes, well, who is this? She says, well, I don't need to tell you. She says, well, this is his wife. And she says, well, that's impossible. I'm pregnant with his baby.
Oh, my God.
But it gets worse. Oh. And I'm going to finish. Then my wife goes, I've heard this before. And so then a man comes on the phone and says, listen, you bleeper, and says her dad's medical condition to her and says, I hope he bleeping dies, in a mean voice, and hangs up. So the government or private contractors who've been following us around were real angry that we got in Bilderberg out that year on your show and Drudge. They were there, and they were listening to my phone, and then they called up and harassed my wife. That's who runs this government, folks.
That's scary. Kelly is in Moline, Illinois. Go ahead, Kelly.
Hi, George, Alex.
Hi.
First of all, I want to say God bless both of you for what you do and keeping us all informed out here. My statement is that I have always believed that 9/11 was a precursor to this financial mess that we're in now.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they brought those buildings down to hide all the financial paperwork, files, whatever, to cover up the stealing, the largest heist in history, to steal trillions of dollars out of our economy. What do you think?
What do you think, Alex? That sounds kind of plausible.
Well, I mean, it's on record that the big mega banks in 2008 basically played possum and said that they were going into a depression if we didn't give them unlimited money. And for the third time in 3 years, the Queen of England suspended the Canadian Parliament 2 weeks ago because they weren't following her orders. And the same thing has happened in Australia in 79. So there's an example of the Queen of England's power, that she can just shut down a parliament of one of her commonwealths if they don't do what she wants. It's okay to have a ceremonial parliament as long as they do what they're told.
Yep, you're right about that. We've got time maybe for one more or two. William in Green Bay, Wisconsin. First-time caller. William, thanks. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex and George. I'm wondering, do you see the connection between what you research and biblical end-time prophecy? And the
you
other
cannot
question.
Ignore you cannot ignore the incredible parallels of things written 2,000 years ago, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. I mean, you read Ezekiel, you read other books. I mean, a flying disc with fire coming out of the bottom. Giant metal birds dropping bombs the size of mountains that created huge explosions. Yes, George.
There you are. Almost lost you again.
Yep. See what I'm talking about?
That is strange. One quick question for you.
Yes,
FBI releases 2,000 documents. Included is a memo about a 1950s episode. I think they were talking about Roswell from 47, but the memo was dated 1950, where they said they had three occupants per craft. It's a bizarre story. We're following up on that, Alex.
There are giant agendas going on that we don't know about. We're on a planet in space. All sorts of things are going on. I can't get the public to admit that radioactive isotopes are being added to their drinking water, even when it's CBS News in Texas. So there's no doubt that, and I have seen those new documents that came out. It's unbelievable. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, as radical as I sound, as radical as George sounds, the truth is people just 500, 600 years ago thought the world was flat. And many people that sit there and scoff at the issues that George and I bring up, they're basically the 21st century of flat earthers. We're just questioning, we're investigating, we're opening people's minds, their eyes, we're widening horizons, and we need to expand that trailblazing, investigative, exploratory spirit. That is what is going to save humanity. We need to stop being spectators who just sit back on the couch and receive the propaganda. We need to start thinking for ourselves, getting involved, and supporting alternative media, chief among it, coasttocoastam.com, infowars.com, because for whatever reason, the system is frightened by these shows. They're frightened by the alternative media. They're frightened by talk radio because it gives you a voice, and it's uncontrollable. It's not scripted, and the system doesn't like it.
You got that right. Alex, thank you so much on the program. Alex Jones, for Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lautasour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.